morning, everyone. Welcome to Tuesday, September 25th, 2020's agenda, City Council meeting for the City of Aurora Grande. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George?
Here.
Councilmember Paulding?
Here.
Councilmember Burnage?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Storton?
Here.
And Mayor Ray Russum?
Here. Would you please join me in a moment of reflection? We have Mr. Steve Wilson from the Lions Club to join lead us in the flag salute.
Thank you very much for the invitation to the Lions Club to lead in the Pledge of Allegiance. If everyone would stand, you can, and place your hand over your heart and repeat after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. And I'll just make a couple of comments, if that's okay.
Please do.
As previously mentioned, I'm from the Lions Club. We had a very successful fundraising year last year, thanks to all of our wonderful sponsors in the local area, primarily Aurora Grande and the Five Cities area, I should say. And I've put on my reading spectacles here. I have three calendar items I'll just bring up. The Lions will be Saturday over at Margaret Harlow School. We're doing a choir fundraiser for Lucia Marr. About 70 children are involved, and we're providing our much vaunted catering services. We try to dinner there, so come by if you have time. It's 2 to 5 p.m. at Margaret Harlow. That's this Saturday. Also, we'll be supporting there's an election coming up. I don't know if you knew about that. March 3rd, we're going to be supporting or manning one of the precincts up at Cypress Ridge. And then of city interest, if I can find it here, we have a barbecue fundraiser for the AG department or the AG Rec department. And it's $10. I'm told that you can purchase tickets online. That'll be March 20th. 4:30 to 6 p.m. will serve up at the Women's Club building, 211 Vernon Street. So helps out the rec department. It'll be that famous Lions tri-tip barbecue dinner, not sandwiches, but dinner. So.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for all you all do.
You bet.
Under agenda review, closed session announcements.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The council discussed pending litigation, but there's no reportable action.
Thank you so much. And can we please have someone move that all ordinance presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. Tonight we have no special presentations under item 6, so that brings us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is their chance to come up and talk to us about items that are not on tonight's agenda. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less and address the council as a whole.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Linda Ossie. I live in the village of Aurora Grande, and I'd like to offer an invocation tonight. Heavenly Father, we are thankful for you and for the opportunity to be a service for a greater good. We thank you for our council, who are charged with focusing on the community they represent, and for our city as a whole. We pray for all those suffering with coronavirus. May they be healed. Bless them, Father, that the burden that they have for their community be shared by the people they represent. I pray for the unity in their hearts. May they share one focus, and may that focus be a blessing to you. Grant every member of our council and our city staff a strong desire for your wisdom, the courage to say it, and the commitment to never turn from recidivism. Father, let our city be a land pleasing and prosperous in your sight. Bless our military and our law enforcement, who lay their lives on the line every day on your behalf. In Jesus' name we pray. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to come up and address the council on items not on tonight's agenda?
I'm Chad Jackson, the tenant at 202 LaPointe Street, and I wasn't able to attend the city council meeting last month, so I just wanted to come tonight and just make a few comments on it. And I just wanted to say I appreciate the City Council for those that were in favor of increasing the rent in the minimum amount. And I know there was some fallout, I guess, on social media and some New Times articles regarding the results of the meeting and the rent increase. And I read a lot of the comments on there, and it seemed like the overall, actually all of the comments really were in support of the minimum increase of the rent, and just sort of a community opinion that to support affordable housing. I think that's an important issue in our community, and I don't mean low-income housing, you know, affordable housing, because I'm not a low-income individual. I have a full-time job. I work for, I'm an associate archaeologist for the state parks, the San Luis Obispo Coast District. So I just wanted to kind of mention that, and I know many of you understand the value of myself and my family as good tenants and the value that that adds to the property and the house there. And we, I think we all know it's a really tiny little house. It's a funky little place, but and we'll be hard pressed to find a comparable property to try to adjust the rent to, you know, find something that would, I guess, validate the rent that is being desired and then the rent that we're now paying. I think it's more than fair what it is now, and I think maybe at next year's council meeting when we devote the lease to the agenda, I would like to suggest a cap on the rental increases instead of continuing to increase the rent every year. Maybe base it off of you know, just the value of us as tenants and where it's at now, and just it's a really tiny little house, and there's a lot of, you know, the lack of amenities. You know, we're not fetching our own water from the creek, but, you know, washing our dishes by hand, and just kind of accepting that it's a really minimal, you know, we deal with kind of minimal materialistic qualities of the house, but we like it, and we put a lot of time and love into, like, the landscaping. I think that's really what adds a lot of the value when you look at the house. And so maybe it looks like the house maybe is worth more than a monthly rent, but I think a lot of it is due to just the way that we present the house and all the hard work that we put into it. So I just wanted to mention that. And again, thank you to the city for you know, having the city's best interest in mind. So, thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak on items not on tonight's agenda? All right, seeing no one, I'll close public comment and bring it back to us to move on to the consent agenda. As we get to that, I'm going to go ahead right off the bat and pull item 8H to allow our community development director to address just a little clarification there. Other than that, but not for separate consideration, would anyone like to pull anything for questions or separate consideration?
I just have a question on 8E.
Just 8H, but you're going to pull it.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, why don't we start then for questions of staff with 8E, Councilmember George?
Good evening.
Hi, good evening.
On page 2 of the staff report, second to last paragraph, it says, because the budget is over $2 million, the good faith effort must be approved by Caltrans headquarters. And my question is, has the DBE goal of the 12.8 been approved by Caltrans headquarters yet?
Well, so just to clarify, I wanted to make sure I'm speaking to the right item. So this is on the Castillo, on our
AP is the
Bridge Street. I'm going to go ahead and let our public works director respond to those comments because I think he has the most up-to-date information.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So your question was whether or not Caltrans headquarters had approved the percentage for the disadvantaged business enterprise?
Yes, because it's supposed to be 16 and the bid came in at 12.8.
That's right. So the headquarters has not yet approved it. They're still evaluating. The local District 5 has approved it. So we're moving ahead with that percentage, and we're going to be waiting for the headquarters to come back with their approval. Many times they just don't respond, so we go with that, with our percentage, and rely on District 5's approval and we move forward with the project in that way.
And we're okay if they come back and they don't approve it? What happens in that case? Or is that something that doesn't really happen?
If they don't approve it, it still falls back to us looking at the good faith effort that's put forward by Granite Construction. And we review that again with Caltrans District 5, and then it ultimately falls back on the local agency and the local Caltrans representatives to make that final determination.
Thank you. I think that was... Yeah, that's my only question. Thank you.
Thank you. And on item 8H, we got some commentary from the public, and you have already responded online, but I wanted to give you a chance to let everybody know what the outcome of that was.
Sure. So, for the record, this is Whitney McDonald, the Community Development Director. Questions we received on 8H, so this is an item where we're recommending or requesting its extensions on existing contracts with projects that haven't yet been completed. And one of those items is related to our safety, roadway safety analysis plan. And questions about the scope of work that that our contractor provided to us identified a specific bike coalition group that we needed to consult with. It identified the Slow Bicycle Club, and the question was, did we really mean that club? There are other clubs, such as the Bike Slow County organization, that maybe should have been the appropriate organization. We've gone back and conferred, and we believe the intent was to identify an appropriate organization of bicycle riders to consult with as we prepare this plan. We have actually been consulting with both of those organizations since the plan started and has been underway since May. We intend to do the same thing. We don't intend to be cutting anybody out of that conversation, and we'll be continuing to include both of those organizations going forward as we complete and wrap up our plan. Mm-hmm. And so that's the information that we've provided to people who reached out with that question.
Thank you very much. And did you have a follow-up?
No,
or was that your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. All right. Thank you so much. If there are no other questions, I'll go ahead and open this up to public comment. Would anyone like to come up and speak on items 8A through 8H? You sure, students? Okay, with that, I'll close public comment and bring it back to the council for consideration and or a motion.
Go ahead.
I'll move to approve consent items 8A through 8H.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, and on the emergency thing, do we have to read that one as though... So with that, can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Starton?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
And Mayor Ray Russin?
Yes. Item 9A is consideration of community development block grant projects for year 2020. Welcoming Community Development Director McDonald back. And if you at home would be patient with us, we're having some technical issues. We're going back old school to 2010, so it's going to take us a moment to get the pages set up. So please give us a moment before we start the staff report.
Okay. I like that this is old school, even though I remember when it was new technology. So. Hopefully that indicates I might be able to use it. Okay, so we are here today to consider approving the list of CDBG projects for the year 2020, and CDBG stands for Community Development Block Grant. Good evening. My name again is Whitney McDonald. I'm your Community Development Director, and just a little background on the Community Development Block Grant Program. It is a federal program that's administered by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. It provides local governments with financial resources to address a wide range of community development needs, such as affordable housing, social services, job creation, and public facility improvements. Here, the County of San Luis Obispo administers a program for our area. It is considered an urban county, and the county makes allocations of CDBG grants based on a formula. All of the cities in the county, with the exception of Grover Beach, participate in the county's CDBG entitlement program and receive funds annually. Grover Beach competes for funds separately through the state because of certain criteria that they meet that makes them a little more competitive that way. So again, CDBG, it is a federal program, and it distributes our funds to participating cities and counties. Allocation of CDBG funds can be made for a variety of projects as long as they meet national objectives, including they benefit low and moderate income persons, they aid in preventing or eliminating slums or blight, or they address urgent community development needs that pose a serious or immediate threat to public health and safety. The main objective of the program is to develop viable urban communities by providing decent housing, a suitable living environment, and economic opportunity. The CDBG funds must be used for activities that meet one of these national objectives. Here's a list of the CDBG requirements. So no less than 70% of each year's allotment can be used for projects that benefit low-income persons. There's a cap of 30% on projects that eliminate blight. There are limits on the types of projects or programs that are eligible for CDBG funds. There's also a 15% cap on public service projects. There are restrictions against funds paying for projects that are already underway. And there are certain timeliness requirements for use of funds and completion of projects that the grant program requires. And we also would need to comply with federal environmental laws and labor laws and procurement regulations in order to take advantage of these grant programs. So this year, we are anticipating that the city is going to receive $87,042 in CDBG funds. Those funds will not become available until the fall of 2020. And this represents a slight increase above the funding we got last year of about 9%. As we've done in the past, the county is going to help administer the program. It's also noted that even though we're anticipated to receive a 9% increase in funding this year, we did experience a significant cutback in funding if you look historically at what the city received. And that's not just the city, that's occurring across the board. So the grant program divides the types of funds into six categories, and those relate to the types of projects that the funds can be used for: public services, public facilities, economic development, general area benefit, housing rehabilitation, and then finally administration. And in the public services category, the amount that we can allocate is capped at 15% of the total we get for the year. You likely recall that the city created its own community services grant program in 2014, which we later renamed the Jim Guthrie Community Services Grant Program, because we were seeing difficulties in administering the CDBG funds to small projects that were really looking for support for their social services. We did receive two applications for public services, one from the Food Bank Coalition of San Luis Obispo County, and one from People's Self-Help Housing. And just touching back on the Jim Guthrie Community Services Grant Program, you will be seeing that come back to your council for grant recommendations in April. So I know historically you've seen both the Jim Guthrie Community Services Grant application process and allocations come to you at the same time as the CDBG allocations. This year we needed to take the Jim Guthrie Grant Program separately and a little bit later because of changes to the committee structure that we need to have made. But you will be seeing that in another 2 months. So the next category of uses for CDBG funds is for public facilities. Unlike the public services category, there's no funding cap. So this is where, you know, we can use all of our CDBG funds for public facilities. The city's priority has been to use these funds to address Americans with Disability Act accessibility deficiencies. And so last year, the council approved $56,148 of CDBG funds to be used for barrier removal projects in this category, as well as some funds for administration. You will see we are recommending that those funds that were allocated in 2019 be reallocated to this year's project in 2020. So some examples of public facilities that have been funded by the city through CDBG have been not changes to, say, City Hall, but we're looking at changes to the city's parks and recreational facilities, and again, ADA barrier removal. So we're really focusing on making sure that we get, you know, ADA compliant with accessibility for all of the city services to people with disabilities. The administration category is capped at 20% of the total allocation. This is amounts to $17,408 for the year 2020. Because the county helps administrate these funds, they are recommending, or we are recommending, that they receive $11,315 of that total administration fund for the year 2020, and this is based on our current cooperative agreement. The city is recommending that we would receive $11,662 in total. That includes both 2020 allocation as well as 2019 allocation. So much of this probably looks familiar because your council considered preliminary allocations to projects back in December 2019. And at that time, we presented, you know, the list of applications as well as a recommendation to allocate both the 2020 CDBG funds and a reallocation of the 2019 CDBG funds to the city's Phase 4 Soto Sports Complex barrier removal project at Ikeda Field. And so the city submitted, you know, an application to its own CDBG program that lays out the costs associated with that project and the reasons for it, including, you know, the service to the community, as well as the provision of services to what are considered to be low and moderate income persons. So under the CDBG program, ADA projects are presumed to serve low and moderate income persons. And so that adds an additional benefit to the CDBG program because we're providing accessibility in addition to a service to that income category. And so here's just a really simple reminder of the allocation amounts. So we have $56,148 from 2019 that we are recommending be reallocated to this project, as well as the $69,634 from 2020, and then a breakout of the administration grants. You you'll see that because the county has been administering our 2019 grant program, they have received their allocation of administration funds from that year program year already. But the city has not, you know, drawn down that fund yet because we needed to have a project, you know, associated with it. So, additional reasons for allocation to the city's Soda Sports Complex Ikeda Field project is, one is that one of the city's highest priorities is to improve accessibility and to comply fully with the Americans with Disability Act. This project also addresses the CDBG objective of enhancing accessibility for individuals with disabilities on city-owned property. In addition, we looked at the fact that the Soda Sports Complex is a regional asset to our whole Five Cities community, and improvements will provide better access to tournaments and games and field practice for both residents and visitors, both here in our local community and people who visit here. And so our final recommendation is to request that your council adopt a resolution that approves reallocation of the 2019 CDBG funds and approves the CDBG projects for the year 2020, allocating both the 2019 and 2020 funds to the Phase 4 of the Soda Sports Complex Barrier Removal Project at Ikeda Field. So with that, we answer any questions.
Any questions of staff?
Yes.
Councilmember Varnage.
Thank you, Whitney. A question, I apologize for not asking this ahead of time, but I actually was just, it kind of just came to me. We didn't get any applications for, and I don't remember actually ever getting them, any applications for housing rehabilitation or economic development or, well, I guess those two in particular. We were getting so many of the public services that only allocated 15% that we created this Jim Guthrie Fund. But now I'm sort of thinking, going back a little bit, what would those be? I mean, what would a housing rehabilitation or economic development, would that be the city taking on a project, or would that be a nonprofit coming forward and saying, I'd like to apply for these funds under this category?
I think it could be either the city or a nonprofit, you know, somebody who meets the criteria for that particular category of kind of project. But I think you're correct that we haven't seen those. They haven't come through.
So I guess, I mean, this, I think that this is great. What, you know, we direct these funds towards ADA improvements, which we need to do and is absolutely necessary. But I'm also, we have been doing that, we do that as customary. But I'm also wondering, I was assuming that these two other categories weren't necessarily nonprofits, because I thought nonprofits would fall under public services. And so, I don't know, I think, I wonder if people out there, whether it's probably not us, but people that work on housing, rehabilitation, people that perhaps, I guess, would be nonprofits, do they know we have these grants? If they came to us, I don't think we direct them to the Jim Guthrie grants, but it's something I think that we might need to discuss unless we're just always going to do the ADA project. So that's just food for thought. Thank you.
Councilmember Paulding?
Just the one question to piggyback on that, and I'm going to ask this of Jim just because of his longevity with the city. Historically, do you have an idea as to the types and categories of projects? Because I remember even when I worked as a planning intern in the community development department back in 2007, different types of applications coming in through CDBG, and so that would help inform the discussion.
Hi, Jim Bregman, City Manager. So in the history, back in the day, we used to get a whole bunch of different applications. Public service, we did have some for economic development. Maybe one got granted some money 2 years ago, maybe I'm confusing that with someone else, that they're like
facade enhancement. Remember
we haven't done that in quite some time, right. But we used to do facade enhancement. Those were $5,000 grants for businesses. There are companies out there, let's say nonprofits out there that do business assistance for small business. There's sometimes it's a request for that. I think what we run into is just the administrative costs is what's very difficult for this project. So as you get to smaller and smaller distributions of money, there's more and more oversight and contract that you have to do with it. I think that's the past direction was trying to get it to something that meets the needs, that helps the city in general, and then makes it so that we're controlling those administrative costs and getting as much money possible to the applicants.
My second question would just be, looking forward to the next year and the next cycle, we would also be considering, we have a long list of ADA projects, right? Is that kind of the intent at this point in time?
We do. We have a lot of projects that are unfunded in our capital improvement, but we follow the direction of the council, so we've continued on what we're given direction for, but it's certainly up to the discretion or the wisdom of your council that if you want to give us some different thoughts for next year, we could do that, or even for this year.
Thank you.
If I could just piggyback a little off of an additional consideration that we have is new feedback from HUD on the kinds of projects that they're willing to call adequate or appropriate under the CDBG program. So I believe that where we used to maybe use some funds for facade improvements, we've received feedback from HUD over the last, maybe earlier this decade, that said that's not really it. We need to find a different kind of program or different kind of project to use this money for. And so that's, we have to tie, even though there are categories, they all still have to tie back to the national objectives. So we need to say, this is, you know, we're preventing or eliminating slums or blight. And slums and blight kind of, you know, sounds fairly significant. And same with addressing urgent community development needs that pose a serious or immediate threat to public health, safety, and welfare. Those are the kinds of projects that they want to see being addressed through this kind of funding. And then that third category or that third objective is to benefit low and moderate income persons. So if we could, you know, if there's a way of tying projects to that objective, that is something that we could look at. But I just wanted to mention that another issue that we deal with in looking at projects is just making sure that they pass muster with HUD to make sure we're meeting the objectives.
Councilmember George. How many years ahead do we have if we were to say we have a list of ADA improvements, like if you were to come to council every year?
Are we 100?
Like yeah. 25 years, so we're yeah. pretty much the ADA grant is what we can rename it.
It's something long like yeah. that, and then the rules change every 4 years, and then right. we're replacing other things. But that's my personal opinion. Sorry.
So I'm just going to ask some basic questions about the numbers, if you could bear with me. Doing all the math and calculations, adding up the reallocation plus the allocation for this year, subtracting the administrative costs, it looks like we're still deficient about $17,000. Where will those funds come from to complete the project?
So at this point, I don't have a detailed answer on where that shortfall would be made up. I do know it is possible that we could even look for 2021 funds to help complete the project because as we've seen, you know, and the county has indicated that they would support that use of CDBG funds even if it's, you know, next year. We're kind of trying to accumulate enough money to be able to complete the project as a whole. And then the estimate that is in our application that we see here, you know, is based on it. We haven't done, you know, full design work. That those are the kinds of services that we would be looking to be reimbursed through the CDBG funding. We haven't completed environmental review. Those types of things would come next. So that $17,000 gap we would also need to address at that time.
So I believe you said it was like 18, we have 18 months to use the funds, right? So we're reallocating funds from last year. So how much time do we have left? And my question is, is it more expensive to do the project in phases as opposed to just finishing it out if we were to do it all at the same time? So is a 143 taking into account that we're doing it in phases as opposed to the contractors coming in and doing it all at once?
I'm honestly not sure if it, I mean, I had assumed that it would be done in one go, but I probably would need to defer to our public works director on the specifics of the project.
I'm just saying if we have to wait until the next CDBG grant to get the rest of the money, then we might lapse on the first, you know, reallocated funds, and I just don't know how that we juggle that.
Thank you, Bill Robeson, Public Works Director. So we've been in contact with Matt Leal, who's our representative from the county who allocates or administers the CDBG funding. And he's told us that we can go over multiple years, so we're not in danger of losing anything. But I don't think there's really a possibility of phasing ADA ramp project because it really has to be built out to be a functional ramp and serve you know, the people that use it. So hopefully we're going to still make that budget top that or the top of that number that we have. But you know, if we don't, Whitney, I've been talking about that, and we'll just keep working with the county to extend the funding out one more year if it's necessary.
Okay, thank you for that. I had one last question, and I don't mean to nitpick. I just really am curious. It has to do with the application and how it was filled out. So I'm looking at page 48 of the staff report, and under number 2, please select the CDBG national objective that best applies. And I naturally would have assumed it would have been the urgent need for community development, but we checked low to moderate income. And I guess I'm just wondering, and I did read down below, it said the project would help ensure that this group of ADA people, that's not the right terminology, but this group of people would have adequate access, and it is presumed that such persons are principally low and moderate income. And I'm just wondering how that is presumed.
That is a function of the CDBG program itself, is that projects that are intended to help serve persons with disabilities are also presumed to serve persons of low and moderate income. And so that's part of why, you know, this becomes an important funding mechanism for our ADA projects, is because it not only helps provide accessibility to, you know, a segment of the population who really needs it and helps the city comply with its obligations and meet those needs, but it also is competitive under the CDBG sort of ranking criteria because it also provides for that additional level of access and service to people who are presumed to be served as low and moderate income in that criteria.
So is there a census or somewhere that and maybe I'm just missing the mark, that kind of says that people that require ADA access are put in the low to medium income category? Like, where do we get that? Where do we get that status from?
It's part of the actual administration of the program from Housing and Urban Development.
Okay, thank you very much. And those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
I'm good, thank you.
Same here. So go ahead. So I definitely understand, because going back, I understand that it takes a lot of staff time to run the program, and then that's why we have part of the money goes to doing that. And so City Manager Bergman brought up, if we have all these little projects, whether it's economic development, public services, housing rehabilitation, you know, $5,000 here and there, it's really hard to manage it all. But if we had a project for either of the ones that I spoke about, housing rehabilitation or economic development, we're talking all about economic redevelopment or development. If it was a big chunk of money or it was one project, perhaps that would be the same as the ADA projects, correct? As far as staff overseeing it. If it's one big, if someone came in or if the city came up with a project that was so much money that was totally all of, like we're doing now, with all of it going towards ADA, what if the city said, hey, we're going to take all of it and put this towards economic development? It, we're comparing to apples, correct, that it would be the same amount of staff time for either one of those big projects with the same amount of money, correct?
I'm not sure that it would be. I mean, it could be.
Because it depends on the project?
Right, right.
What if it was, I'm assuming since we're applying for the money, the city, mm-hmm. it might be easier to manage because it's us. Versus if another nonprofit came in and applied for a housing rehabilitation for $60,000 or $50,000, maybe it might be a little more staff time because it's someone that's outside the city. Would that be fair to assume? Is that perhaps what... I'm just trying to make sure that we're sort of not just rubber stamping this year after year. And I know that we did the public services and we made sure that we switched it that way and we put all those people towards the Jim Guthrie grants, which I totally understand. But when I'm looking at some of these other categories, I'm thinking maybe we could come up with not every year we do ADA. We could maybe have something else that's in our city goals that we could think of something creative that we're also passionate about. So that's just food for thought right there. That's all. Thank you.
And you've tickled my brain on that, which I've never thought about before. So, City Manager Bergman, would this be possible, or redevelopment direct? That's just too long, Mrs. McDonald. As an example of how we might be able to use economic development funds, would it be possible to use those funds to hire someone to do economic development for the city and as part of their job administer their own grant?
Probably not. In many ways is one, economic development. There's definitely some rules when it comes to economic development. They call this the most flexible federal project or program ever, but what you're going to find out is there's a whole bunch of rules buried in there. Can we do it? Absolutely. If the right economic development person comes in and it has this perfect project that will also meet the points of the project, like serving low to moderate income people, that's hard to show that your economic development program is helping low to moderate income.
So if it's benefiting citywide, then it doesn't match.
Right. And I think what I'm hearing is, at least from Councilmember Barnage, is, and I think that we're all pretty good at, we follow council's recommendation, but every once in a while, an opportunity comes in that none of us expected. And I think that we're going to grab onto things like that and start to talk to the council if we start to get a really creative idea that may not fit right within the ADA plan. So we could do that, but we could also continue on the direction that you have as if you make decisions on what you want the money to be awarded to, types of projects, we'll follow that direction too.
Any further questions of staff? Okay, then let's open this up to public comment. We're getting a no from the one person. We'll give the customary 3 seconds for somebody to run in from the street. And seeing no one, we'll bring this back to the council. Maybe let's start with Councilmember George this time.
First of all, I love that we, or the previous councils, I don't know what year it was, took the time to recognize that the public service was such an important entity that it needed to be addressed, and we were able to set that aside under the Jim Guthrie grant. I do have issues with it just being... I feel like we don't have a lot of applications because it's out there in the wind that people know that if they apply for this, most likely they won't get it because it's going to go to an ADA project. I know I heard that a few years ago. I think that's something that the council should revisit. I know Councilman Barnage touched on that. I don't think that, I think if for it to truly be a community grant, the community needs to feel like they have a chance, and I don't feel like they do right now. It's unsettling to me to authorize the funding for this to go to a project that we may or may not be able to complete. So I really hope that staff does everything that you can do to get this project to move forward, because it's definitely needed, and I'd like to see it completed, and hopefully maybe completed without needing the extra $17,000. That would be awesome. I just have a pet peeve that it so much of the money goes towards administrative fees. I wish there were a way we could avoid that. I know there isn't, but that's just a personal thing. But other than that, I'm in support of moving forward. Thank you.
Councilmember Paulding.
I did have a comment. Okay. Generally, I'm in support. I think that if we can, we're pretty close to completely funding this project, and so taking the funds, identifying key projects, and knocking them out is a great thing to do. I think ADA is a huge priority, and I completely support the staff recommendation.
Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. So I obviously support the project. We have to get it done. And I think it's a good idea, and I definitely think with the Soto Sports Complex, it's going to something that's extremely worthwhile, that gets used all the time, every day of the week, every weekend. But I guess just on the flip side, I would say that we have ADA projects, I think I've been told, for like the next 40 years. I mean, I think it's years and years and years. It was millions and millions of dollars. So knowing that there's no end in sight, I would like the opportunity to, and I don't know how we get the word out or not, but I know there's lots of nonprofits that do low-income housing rehabilitation. We have a lot of low-income and subsidized housing in our city, actually more than any South County city, and we work with Haslow and Habitat and Peoples. And so if there is a project, maybe once every couple of years, it would be awesome for them to come forward and grab this big amount of this money, and just so that it feels like that, yes, we do want to do ADA projects. We have a ton to do, and it's very important. But we also value these other things as well that are in our city that are benefiting low and moderate-income people. So I'm not sure. I'm willing to go, if the majority of the council is willing to go ahead with these recommendations, I'm willing to do that. I just hope that next year, and I know sometimes we get to this meeting next year and it's like, I forgot. We all kind of just move forward. So I hope that we can try to do something where we reach out to maybe some other nonprofits and let them know that the public facilities, the public services are funneled this way, but there's these other categories that we welcome applications. And I do agree with Councilmember George. I have heard that at the HSOC meetings that our CDBG just goes to ADA. I have heard that. So, which is very important. I'm not saying it's not, but I want to make sure that it's truly a process that someone else can apply and maybe have some money allocated towards their project. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Yeah, there are many needs out in our community, and it's difficult to come up here and just say, how do we allocate and address the many needs that are in front of us. I agree that if somebody were to come forward to meet some of these other program objectives, if it was worthwhile, I think it'd be nice for us to discuss it and determine where that money would go. But for now, we discussed this in December and are moving forward, and I'm confident with the staff recommendation, and I think it's a great improvement to that particular area of our city and will provide the necessary access and meet the definition of what we need to do to spend the funds. So I'm in support of the staff recommendation.
As am I. I would just add that it's probably beyond what we can ask staff to do over the next 9 months until we see the next first round or first look on this, to reach out, and perhaps it's on this council to reach out into the community and using the context that we have to ask if people were willing to come forward with applications in those other categories, and so that next year when we do have other things to weigh, those things will come through as part of the package. So it's probably best done by the council.
Right, and I'm actually going to calendar that in my calendar. I will take that on, but can you tell me when I would tell different nonprofits that, hey, this is coming up, and to get the applications in?
Just one suggestion is perhaps we can put this on a future calendar for your council to talk about the whole issue of and get full information about the CDBG program and some things that I think is important in the fact that these are state and federal laws that we have to comply with ADA. We are liable if we do not. Right? So those things, I think you should at least have that whole discussion about the CDBG program and your risks and as well as your opportunities in a program like this. And if that's something you would like for us to come and discuss as an item and give you all that information, we can do that too. So that's just a suggestion or food for thought.
So when would I let anyone else know that wanted to apply for this, kind of put a tickler in my calendar, Whitney?
So I'm looking at our past deadline was October 31st for the application submittal. And so I think, you know, it's all based on when we get an idea from the county that they get from HUD about what we might be able to expect. And then we release the applications with the deadline in the fall.
Okay, and I know that the nonprofits are very familiar with CDBG because they apply all over the county, so they would probably know more than me, but I just want to put that out there. Okay, thank you for that information.
Would anyone like to make a motion?
Sure. I will move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande approving reallocation of the 2019 Community Development Block Grant funds and approving CDBG projects for the year 2020.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? We get a roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
And Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes. Under items 10, we have no old business. Item 11 is new business. This is consideration of general fund 10-year fiscal forecast. City Manager Bergman.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. We have Carolyn Galloway Cooper, who is currently our Interim Director of Administrative Services. She has a long history of being finance director and helping communities like ours. And we also have Nicole Valentine here, who you know works for the city and does a great job at keeping everything going. So I think Carolyn is going to give a presentation. I want to just add in a little bit of context at the end of it, if you'd allow me that.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council, and it's a pleasure meeting you. I've been here since I got here in December, and my last day is this coming Friday, so getting ready to leave, and it's really been a pleasure being here. Thank you so much. So our report, I've got Ms. Valentine is going to, she's going to be doing the PowerPoint, so to speak, and we'll try to just roll through this. Kind of wanted to start with the fact that we focused on the 2021 budget as the budget that, because we'll be going into that, and that'll be being prepared, and at the end of the fiscal year in June, you'll be approving that. So that was our main focus, and then of course trying to extrapolate out those 10 years, the full 10 years. And so I wanted to let you know that we did look at the revenue and expenditures. So what we're going to discuss is the financial outlook, the assumptions, the expenditures, the discussion and validation of forecast, and then we'll just talk about reviewing the budget steps, which we'll, as we go through, we'll be pretty much handling that. So with assumptions, essentially, assumptions reflect the revenue and the expenditures, pretty much. Looked at the last time we did the 10-year was in 2018, so for this 2017-18, so projecting 18-19 was your budget year. And so we're looking, this is 2 years later. So although I used the entire forecast and all of those assumptions, I had to evaluate them because things change and economies change. And some of the assumptions I used because they were, you know, keep being conservative. Others, for example, in as far as revenue, starting off with that, I contacted HDL and looked at the five-year forecast, which included the prior year, 1920, through till for the next five. And the assumptions were low, the old assumptions. So I changed those to exactly what HDL predicted.
HDL?
Mm-hmm. HDL, that's the...
For our people at home.
Oh, HDL. Okay. It does, I'm not sure what it stands for, but it is a company that the city enlists to forecast, basically, their sales tax for budgetary purposes. HDL, by the way, also does property tax, which they didn't happen to do. The city doesn't have them do that right now. Maybe in the future, it might not be a bad idea because they'll give you a five-year forecast. The county will only give you a one-year forecast. So that one is a little bit harder to do. But I called them anyway and talked to an individual there that handles cities and talked to him about the county forecast for the city. And he did tell me that normally what they forecast is it's pretty safe to, if you're at a 5%, in this fiscal year, it's probably going to be, could forecast 5% out. So I went to, that's why those numbers, basically I talked to him and he told me to do that. And I also talked to the county and also just looked at, you know, the county's forecast. And it was, I believe, 5.34 on them. But, yeah, it was 5.34 for 1920. So I used those, I'm confident in the fact that those are probably accurate, sales tax and property tax. And then for TOT and franchise tax and all the others, I looked at the prior forecast, which again was low, based on going back to the prior year and comparing it, and I went back 2 years actually, just comparing it, for example, TOT, from 1819 to 1920, TOT went up 11%. And those numbers were, that's much higher. So we are looking at some good revenue numbers. And, of course, with any forecast, we can change those to go down if we feel that those are too high for some reason. But I'm feeling confident based on historic values. Expenditures, we treat them a little differently because generally we expect them to go up, always expenditures, unless we're cutting. But right now that wasn't what we were planning on doing. So it was, so I looked, we gave a 1 or 2% increase from prior year. So that was basically taking that into consideration. And the other piece of this that was really a huge factor and what drives that forecast incredibly is increases in salary. So for example, 2%, whatever increases are going to be approved to, like, with negotiations, which was difficult for us to tell. So I looked at a 2% increase over the next 2 years, but then I noticed in the prior forecast it was zero. So I left it zero, and if we replug in like a higher number, it'll bump it up. That can be done very easily though, as we go through and prepare actual budget. See if we can change those numbers, maybe after we get a little more information. So hopefully that the forecast is validated based on that knowledge. So we can move on to the next one. So this just now, we'll talk about what I'm sure you know more about this than I do for sure, but just kind of looking at it, overall city's priorities. So within the forecast, making sure we don't forget that we need to maintain the infrastructure, definitely trying to pay off the CalPERS unfunded liability, always controlling cost in every way, and understanding that
that revenue estimates definitely are very, very sensitive, and we don't want to overstate. Unpredictable economic impacts. So basically with those kind of things, if things are looking okay while you're entering into this forecast this first year, certainly we'll have our eye on any impacts that should come up and might come up, may not come up, but something always does. We have to just take a look at that as it comes. Remaining competitive as an employer to attract talented workforce. This is just all cities in general, and this, of course, has to do with salaries, not only salaries, but benefits, and even looking forward to even retirement benefits. And so I guess we can move on. Thank you. And I think you've seen this one before, but this one just kind of drives home the fact that there are many, many expenses that the city has to pay out every year, and they just don't change. So this one hasn't changed, and probably has gone up just a bit. So that's the notable expenses. Again, you've seen this one too, I'm sure. Sales tax distribution, so that the city is in the long run, you can see that it doesn't get a big slice of the pie, and same with property tax. And even though we're seeing increases, we do understand that we don't necessarily get a big piece of it, but we are seeing increases. So we'll go on. Yeah. And again, this is the important part about, I guess we look at this when we have a surplus based on the forecast as it stands, and so this is the kind of thing that you want to look at to think about what we need to in case we can use the surplus for the various reasons on the screen. The police services 24/7, fire service 24/7, the parks and open space, the well-maintained roads, streetlights, and the neighborhood services. I think that would be like a code enforcement. Infrastructure, even the general fund gets hit with having to take care of and spend money on infrastructure. And an accessible and transparent government. And one way that I've seen with accessible and transparent government, what really helps is the best technology in the city, and also, you know, whether it be starting off with even software programs for the financial software programs and good computers and that kind of thing. And then we have, I just took a look at the top five revenues in 1920, and the other pie chart, the main one is the 2019-20, but the other one is just breaking out those other revenues that you have there. So we have a surplus in all the years in this forecast. So all 10 years, we have positive ranges from 80,000 to 532,000 through the 10-year period. Just one thing could change that, though, just reducing a revenue or increasing cost of CalPERS, but and many other things. But I would also like to say that the CalPERS, well, I think we'll move into that in a little bit, so I'll just move into that soon. But I also wanted to say the reserves remain positive and reach the 20% target level in fiscal year 2022. So again, expenditures go up because of the public safety, which is important for the community. CalPERS cost, infrastructure necessities, and being a competitive employer, and the growing unfunded liabilities and retiree health care costs. So the unfunded liability, what I was looking at was CalPERS is so far behind on the statistics that they have, and so I did realize that you have paid off all of your small amounts that were due, like the PEPRA, which is
fabulous, and you paid down a huge amount towards the millions, 3 to 5 million, I believe, altogether, on the police and the police, yeah, not the fire, because that's something different, sorry, police. So, I'm sorry, I finally saw that and understood it, but it makes such a huge difference when you pay those down, because your your CalPERS costs are going to eventually go to not zero, but it will just be those percentage increases that they have again on the salary every year. And in actuality, on that this forecast, I think those costs, with you paying down already what you have, and then if you continue to pay down, that's actually going, your fund balance is even going to go higher just on that element of alone, just not taking into consideration any other changes. If you just change that, your fund balance would go higher than what it is right now, which it looks really good right now, and it's a really, really good thing to pay down CalPERS. So as you can see, the chart shows that you're above, the revenues are above expenditures, and that you begin in 2022 to go above your target level of 20%. Is really good. And so basically, general fund surplus over the next 10 years reaches the target level in 2021-22. All cities are facing the need to increase revenues, maintain the infrastructure, again, attract talented workforce, and pay off CalPERS. And this city seems to be doing a very good job on that. Monitor revenue sources, so that's what we're planning on doing, as well as update revenues and expenditures based on new information to complete the 2021 budget. So over the next 2 months, that's what staff will be doing, is to revisit this, check very carefully that these numbers or percentages are correct, make changes where necessary, and present a budget that's a valid budget for 2021. And so that way we'll meet all the goals within 10 years. So I'm giving you some key dates. So the operating and KIPP budget meetings with staff will be February 26th, and I believe that is tomorrow. Hopefully that works out. Yeah, it's sooner than we think. A draft budget will be completed March 23rd. Distribution of a preliminary budget, May 5th. Preliminary budget presentation, May 12th. And we'll be back here June 9th for a budget adoption, or June 23rd if we need to come back again. So that would be somebody else other than me, but that's at least we have it set out for the next person. And I thank you so much, and that's the end of my report. If you have some questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
City Manager Brookman, you wanted to add?
I do.
If you call out,
let's see what we got here. Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to add a little context to this, and thank you, Carolyn, for your great work, and Nicole also. So let's go to the next slide. When you look at a tool like this, I'm looking at it, and I always look at these things with a lot of caveats. One, it's a tool, but it's a tool with a lot of limitations, and those limitations are human beings have to make assumptions about the future, and that's hard to do. This is budget-based, not based on actual, so it's very difficult. We don't know how much savings there may have been last year and what's coming into this. This is certainly a tool just looking at, okay, here's our past budget. This is what it's going to cost for us to do it in the future. What do we think is going to happen? Anyone can make this budget assumptions and make it their own. We do have an Excel spreadsheet. We're thinking about how do we make it so that people can get this thing and play around with it and take a look at some of the assumptions. We'll do that a little bit here in this presentation. Next slide there. So what do I see when subject matter experts give this to me? So one, we have two forecasts, one in 2018, one in 2020, since I've been here. Both of them made by great people who constantly read, constantly trying to stay on top of what the world is doing, what the finances are going to do, what the state legislature is trying to do, all sorts of information. So I let them come up with their information and give us their best guess. Second is they're advised by a whole bunch of other subject matter experts who actually have some data, too, behind them. When we talk about HDL, HDL is one of the companies that can go through the Department of Finance in California and get all the data. They can tell us everything we want to know about sales tax, property tax, and we use them. They come here quarterly. They talk to us. They tell us about what they think the future is. And quite frankly, unless they say something that seems really uncharacteristic, generally we follow what they advise us with. And although I haven't been doing this very long, I haven't seen anything that makes me question their data. There's a lot of unknowns, so what's the famous line? There's unknowns, there's knowns, and there's unknowns you don't even know about. Something like that. Well, that's what a projection like this is. I look at this, and the further out we go, the more skeptical I get. When I look at this, we're trying to use this as a tool for our two-year budget. So things that are closer to today, I believe a lot more than things that are further out. As a matter of fact, I probably said it 52 times about counting chickens or something, right? Because that's what you're supposed to do is not count them until they're hatched. When we look at our assumptions, we're aiming for what the most likely future is. I just looked at the newspaper today and talks about the coronavirus. How will that affect Arroyo Grande? I don't know, but it probably will have some effect somewhere, whether it's a decrease in tourism, I don't know. But these are a lot of things, so we're trying to aim for what's the most likely future. What is past the straight face or the smell test and trying to give that to you. But in the end, we want you to be able to make this your forecast. So another thing is this is not the complete picture. So if people think that this is the complete picture of all our finances and everything is solved, that's not true. We have a lot of documents like the CAFR, our audits. There's a whole bunch of information that tries to capture our financial situation. Unfortunately, they just never all come out at the same time. There's always some sort of lag in the information or the data. We continue on with what our direction have been in the past. I would assume that we will repeat this at the next budget process. And much like the CDBG, when you're talking about, well, what if something great comes in and we weren't able to anticipate it? Well, we're also, the second we start to see data that's significant to what we have in a forecast, we're going to talk about it among staff, and then we're going to get out here and we're going to tell you and the public about it as soon as we can. And there's lots more fiscal policy work ahead. So if we go to the next slide. Sorry for tonight. It was probably small anyways on PowerPoint, but... So I have three big financial components that I think about when we're talking about the city. The first is continuing service levels for the next 2 years, right? So this forecast looks like we will be able to provide the services that we were able to provide for the last 2 years for another 2 years, and maybe some bonuses on top of it. Second is... we have a whole bunch of assessments, and I've been talking about this for a little bit, that shows that deferred maintenance is a problem. Since 2007, when the world changed and we had to significantly change our budgets, even back then we had problems with deferred maintenance, but now it's really bad. Or at least it's out there. It's documented from 2016, 2017. We have information of what would be best practices for you and your council to spend on these deferred maintenance projects so that in the end, as a community, we spend only as much as we need to and not more because we ended up with more costs because of deferred maintenance. And then lastly out there is another big one, and we've talked about this before, is we have about $20 million in unfunded pension liabilities that we owe to CalPERS, and that's a relatively high interest rate, 7% basically. And they can add to that. every time. So if people just take one graph and then take that out of context, I guess what I'm trying to say to people is, please don't do that. Let's talk a little bit about it. Number two of what I see when
go back?
Sure.
Because I don't understand what reduced commissions means.
Oh, yeah. So there was the thing. So we talk about what we did 2 years ago in the budget was you had to make some very significant decisions that...
Parks and Rec.
So Parks and Rec, we also closed
like
the...
money commissions.
We closed the door to City Hall. On Fridays, we're still in there working. People tug on the door, and it kills us inside. But we know that that decision was made because we had to. You wanted to fix this revenue expenditures gap. Just like we're a community about community, right? And when people say they don't have the ability to speak or participate because we eliminated Parks and Rec Commission or Historic Resources Commission, that's real. That's all stuff that we believe in and we know. And these were decisions that were made. Made decisions to take $5 million in savings and pay it towards CalPERS. That had a huge cash flow effect. And it's very helpful. And so I guess what I was trying to say is those sacrifices were sacrificed by everyone, right? Not just staff, not just council members, but citizens who come here. And I think what we're going to see, what you'll see, what I see in this report, I think that those were incredibly brave leadership moves that you took. And that's the way I'm seeing it, though. So any more questions on that one?
No, it just, the commissions, I got it, though.
Okay. So you can take this data. I mean, these are three simple sheets, but they're great if you really want to get into them. So you can take a look at things, and you can see, okay, so our revenues are predicted to increase by 2.18% together, right? So when you take all our revenues, that's what we're expecting. We just talked with HDL, and we're going to beat the state, right? Or we probably beat the state.
Don't forget your mic for the people at home.
Oh, sorry. So 2.81% is pretty good. So another thing that you start to see, and you know, to me this is all about education too, is property tax. Our property tax share went up 5%. That's amazing. That's 5% went up. But then you got to look at it was $255,000. All the property in our city went up by valuation, or at least our share went up 5%, and we got $255,000. And you see the size of money things that come in the door, right? So to me, it's a very interesting thing. It gives us a little bit of data and it makes us better in the future. Like we could say, look at sales tax. Sales tax, sales went up a 0.5%, pretty flat for California. We actually did better than California. That was a whopping $20,000 into your general fund. Okay? So to me, that all of a sudden, this 3 pages of document is a lot of information. And it's a lot of great information. So look at our expenditures. However, that's great. We went up 2.81%. But our expenditures are predicted to rise by 5.88%. Our PERS increase alone was 16.32%. I looked at the data in the sheet before we factored in the fact that you paid $5 million. It would have went up 25%. 16%. You saved a whole bunch of cash and you made it so that we're able to put it back into services here. Operating programs are going up $525,000. We know this community needs to implement the strategic plan of the fire department. And the next year, that's going to go up 20%. That's $413,000. Medicare, FICA increases, those go up 9.57%. That's $45,000. So let's go to the next slide there. So 1 year expenditure increase of $892,000. So here it is broken down in 21-22. We're going to be up 2.81%, $519,000. However, our expenditures are going up a cool $1 million, as you point out. And so that means we're going to be behind $530,000 this year. Although we got reserves, so it's going to be okay. But that's the reality. Costs went up $1 million, and we got in $500,000 in new revenue. Same thing for fiscal year 21-22. It looks like the model, it looks like our revenues are going to go up a little bit more. Again, it's the second year, so have a little bit more skepticism in there, but let's see what happens. But then our expenditures are going to go up a little bit. It's going to go up less. So what we're seeing in this model is potentially it's going to at least get a little smaller without revenue. Yeah. So let's go to the next slide. Number three is again, I touched on this before, difficult policy choices have worked. So for the moment, I believe that you have been able to close this revenue expenditure gap. And the model shows that you could potentially return a modest amount of money in reserves in the next 2 years. And here's the two reasons why I think that's true. Yep. So here we were in 2018. Again, we're going to do something about these slides here. So, do I have a pointer or anything? There you go. Oh, I got a pointer right here. Look at this. People are the best. All right. So, 2017, when we sat here, we saw that if we continued the way we were going to be short $583,000. So, you were going to have to take that out of your savings to do it. The next year, we projected you were going to be $911,000 short. And then it goes on, and these numbers get big. But again, this is about skepticism as we get further out, right? Let's check up this thing every 2 years. So, yep, go to the next one. So, we've got to zoom out now. So, Carolyn comes up with this graph and shows us what's happening here. At least on per this model, revenues and expenditures are the same, and over time, theoretically, if the entire world follows every one of our assumptions, it will look like that. But I'm not believing it will do that. But let's we'll find out 2 years from now. We'll get another 10 years. Okay. So then I took so back in 2017, we had a new president. Every single smart person about finance, when we go to the economic outlooks, everything else, they said, the recession's coming. The recession's coming. So we planned in a recession. And what we planned it in is we planned it in on the third year, so the first out year of a two-year budget. So if I took those same exact numbers of that recession, and now there's no expert saying recession, right? It was how long can this unprecedented economic growth go? And, here we are, right? So what do we do with that? So I look at, we put in the same recession, and that was big numbers. It was, some of this was very significant, 5% of sales tax. It ended up like losing $1 million a year. So right here, I look at our next 2 years, that we've essentially fixed that gap. Now, if we're starting to get indications that the economy is going south, we're going to be right back here, because what we're seeing here is if we have a recession like was predicted in our last forecast, we're going to have to do things differently, right? I mean, it's very, very apparent that we'll have to do things differently. Let's go to the next slide. So this is also a great tool for all its flaws, but it's great so that we can test sensitivity to different situations. So I have a couple here I was able to play around with some of the assumptions in there. So, sure, zoom in on that little yellow part there. So in page three of this forecast is basically all of Carolyn's assumptions. And it says things like, how much will sales tax go up? 0.5%, 1%, 2 cents? What percent will property tax go up? So that's where we can play around with this, and we can say, okay, what happens if all of a sudden we start to get a retail-type slowdown? So all of a sudden people stop spending money. We're probably going to see the impact from sales tax first. We're not going to see property tax right away, but it's going to be sales tax. And it's probably going to be TOT with people visiting. So what would happen if our sales went flat? They didn't increase at all for 4 years. And what happens if our TOT, because of that, goes flat for 4 years? Let's take a look at, just slide over a little bit, and let's see what happens to our graph here. I don't know why Word does this, but I drug this from Word into PowerPoint and it changed all my colors and I just didn't have time to deal with it. But what does it show? It shows in the first couple of years we're still good with our revenues and expenditures about the same, and it certainly changes our outlook of what kind of reserves we'd have in years out, you know, 3 through 10. But that's something I think, you know, right away it's telling us, okay, we got this great tool and we could throw in some different scenarios and maybe we could even be ahead of the curve. We could be figuring out what's going on. And then lastly, we have one more. So this is kind of an odd vestige, and we'll try to work on it next year. On your document for the forecast, on the assumptions, there's a line that talks about cost of living increases. And it was 2% in the first year, and then you had 0, 0, 0, 0. Okay. So why was that? I don't know. We were probably in negotiation with labor last time we did this, and magically we're back into negotiations with all three laborers now. But if you were to look at, okay, let's put 2% in all of those zeros, and we're going to assume that you know, cost of living goes up, and we're going to make sure that employees stay up with what they had before. Here's what 2% cost of living in those additional years would do. We're still in the first couple of years. We're right at our revenue and our expenses. As a matter of fact, it goes, you know, predicted for 10 years that we're okay. We can meet that. But then look what it does to your reserves. And I think that having a tool like this helps everyone, right? So the idea becomes, yeah, 2% or 1% of our salary, that's a significant amount of money. And it can seriously affect what kind of future we're going to have or what assets we're going to be able to react to. So I don't know if I've said too much or too little, but we do have this forecast, and we can talk about what your assumptions are. You can go through that sheet. We can we do stuff on the fly? We don't have PowerPoint. We wanted to, but maybe we could do that in the future. If you feel like you want to see more assumptions, we'll go back and run them, or we could run them real time maybe next time. But with that, that's our presentation, and Nicole and Carolyn could answer a bunch of questions, and I think the rest of us are here to be helpful if we can.
Thank you. You might as well leave those all up there. It would have been great to have gotten those before the meeting tonight, Jim, so forgive me that I'm going to be having her shuffle through papers because this is the first that we've seen of those. And because Councilmember Barnage and I were the only two here on the 2018 one and have that comparison there, I'm going to take the chair's prerogative and go first with my questions and then have Councilmember Barnage go second and then go from there. So I'm going to start. So I have some conceptual questions that but they're really more directed at you, Mr. Bergman, because they inform how we put the model together, and it's Carolyn Nicole's job to put it all in there. So they're not the decision makers on that. So that's why I'm going to direct my questions to you. So I'm going to, and I wish that we could put this up online because the public can't see it. We received an email today that was helping explain some of this. So I'm going to refer to that email right now. So I'm going to read some of those pieces right now so the people at home know what I'm referring to. So I asked about assumptions, and there's been a good discussion of that. No. Oh, yes, it is. Thank you. You do? Great. That would be so much better if I didn't have to read it. Yes. And so would you please put the bullet points? Thank you. So the first one talks about some of the assumptions not being the same, but the first four bullet points were more fiscal in nature rather than assumptions built into the model. So, Jim, on the first bullet point, we have that community development charges for services have increased, and that was certainly by council direction, so that's great, so we can put a check mark there. I have... thank you. I have a question about the Five Cities Fire Authority contributions. I didn't see any discussion in any of this modeling as to some pretty significant scenario changes that are ahead of us. And so we're assuming a status quo budget, but we've got And in that bullet point, it says, this is due to the status quo budget for fiscal year 2019-20 through 2020-21, and MOA agreement and slowing the Five Cities Fire Authority strategic plan changes. But what that doesn't address is the scenarios that we're dealing with right now that will become more clear to us next week. And I feel like it's really difficult to have a 10-year forecast when these numbers are going to significantly change. And we have none of that built in. Can you comment on that?
So I guess I had about the same thoughts. And then when I looked at the 10-year projection for Five Cities Fire and what we have in there as assumptions of what we're going to be providing, it seems that it's following the strategic plan. And if we are to a situation where we are reconsidering who's members of the Five Cities Fire Authority, I'm still going to think that we're going to be close to in the ballpark with the amount of numbers that we put in over the next 10 years. So it starts to say that we're going to be contributing over $3 million a year to Five Cities Fire.
So the Five Cities Fire, from what I understood from the forecast, there's certain operating expenditures on two line items in the forecast, and then there's a reimbursement. And it was my understanding that was for the same amount. So that's as far as I can understand it.
So on Five Cities Fire Authority for expenditures, if you take a look at that line there.
Which page are we on?
So it's going to be expenditures, page 7 of item 11A. And you look at Five Cities Fire contributions. Started out at $2 million, 2.4. As we go through here, we're at, year 24-25, we're at $3.2 million. And then all the way up to 2029-30, we're at $3.5 million. So let's just assume. I mean,
what's that escalation factor based on?
Their strategic plan being implemented. But this also becomes, it's rough with the numbers, but I think the budget for the Five Cities Fire Authority is around $6.6 million, maybe $7 million.
Not sure.
Is it not? I think it's in the $6 millions is what I would guess on, right? So here we are looking at, we're forecasting that if it went forward with different people other than the strategic plan, we're at least thinking about what half of a Five Cities Fire Authority would be doing if there was only down to two cities. So I'm trying to say that I think that this number right now, until we get more information, is a pretty good guess of what we'll be paying. But we've got to find out what happens in the future, and then we'll adjust the numbers. But your share of, starts to go up to what would probably be half of what it would cost to run a two-city fire department.
But that's later on, I think, that in years.
Yes.
Right.
I'm talking, like, I think, sorry for interrupting, but the 2021 and the 21-22.
It's gone up significantly from $2 million to $2.5 to $2.86 to $3 million.
But that's based on a strategic plan that we're going to have to pay for at a higher rate potentially later. So those numbers aren't going to absorb that change.
It depends. I guess I would say that if you're down to two operators in the Five Cities Fire Authority, you have one-third less cities you got to protect. So I don't know what the ultimate budget's going to be. I'm just trying to ballpark this and say, does this number at least seem sort of reasonable for both scenarios?
Okay.
That's where I feel like that number is okay.
Go ahead.
Since we're on the fire authority, would it be okay to just ask a question? So when we, right now, our contribution, well, we had the 47%, but now we have our year 44% agreement. When we calculated these numbers out in 2018, we used the 47%. As we look to the future, do you know if we used 47 or 44?
We kept it the same as in the 2018.
So it could be 3% higher.
Right. Okay.
On the third bullet point, operating programs always come in a little bit low. We tend to, our staff is awesome and they don't spend too much money, and that's great. So that always seems to show that sort of small variance. But I'm really confused by the fourth bullet. Salary and benefits are less than anticipated. The actual budget was $11,264, variance of $293,000 due to the reduction of 7.4 full-time employees. The reduction of 7.4 employees only resulted in $293,000 of savings?
Some of the positions were filled with people, and some of the positions were not filled. And I believe we gave that breakdown of what we thought would be the ultimate savings once we did some reorganizations. And that's where I think that number came from, but we will leave that with the finances.
So how many did we actually reduce when it was all said and done?
It was 7.4 positions.
But you said we backfilled it. Wait, I'm confused. I thought you just said that the 293 is 7.4, except that we have hired new people. Did I misunderstand what you said?
Probably because I didn't say it very well. It's more of, we said when we were talking about if we reduce 7.4 FTEs, it will result in this amount of savings. However, we are going to do a couple of replacement positions at a lower level, and then ultimately that will net out at about, I guess my memory is about $400,000 savings, so I could do more research for you, but that's my memory, which is very fallible these days with so many numbers.
Okay. And just if you could refresh my memory on the property tax in lieu of VLF, is that also known as triple flip? Okay, just refreshing my own memory on that.
And no matter how good it looks, the state took way more money.
I know it. So, a couple of, you mentioned that if you could put the final graph back up from Mr. Bergman's, maybe not that one, sorry.
I'll just go with them and you tell me.
No, are you talking
keep
about
going,
else?
Keep going. That one. So, I take that back. This is going to be too hard flipping through papers. I'm sorry. Okay, so you said that this was based on, obviously, our in-house experts and the experts that we consult with. And I took a look at the Beacon Economics forecast that we just looked at in November of 2019. And basically what they said was that there was no recession in sight for roughly 2 to 3 years. So we're right in the ballpark of about 2 years right now. I also did some research on both recessions and periods of growth. And this is nothing that people don't already know, but the average number of months in a growth cycle is 59. The longest prior to the one we're in right now is 120 months. We're in 128 and counting. So if we add in 24 more months to that, then we're going to be in a growth cycle that's pushing 140 months. And yet we've built a 10-year forecast that says, you know what, we're assuming that that's going to go 120 more months. How do we do that with fidelity?
I guess the thought that comes into my head is we do hear a lot of information from people, right? Beacon, and nothing against Beacon. They're PhDs. They know all this stuff, right? We hear what they say every time, right? Sometimes they're right. Sometimes they're wrong.
That kind of doesn't address my question.
We just finish it. Assertions without evidence sometimes should be dismissed without evidence, right? So this is what I'm thinking in my head, right? Is people say, hey, we could have a recession in 3 years. We sure could, right? I mean, I'm not seeing anyone with solid, absolute belief that there's going to be a recession. Can we look at it? Can we test our model by putting that up there and say what will happen in a recession? Absolutely. We're not seeing that in the next 2 years. It certainly can happen, and the idea is that we're going to come back to this, and we're checking in, and we're constantly trying to understand what is the world going to do. So I don't know.
Well,
I don't
know
if it'll go on another 120 months, because just because it happened in the past doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be the future.
But in 2018, mm-hmm. Councilmember Barnidge and I and three other people made some really, really hard decisions, some of the hardest decisions I've ever made in all the years I've been serving, based on building in a recession that may or may not happen. That was the basis of those numbers and the basis of that forecast, which was a 10-year forecast, not a 2-year forecast. So I think that my concern is I don't think there's an economist out there that would bet that we would go 120 more months without some sort of recession of some kind. And so is it going to happen in the next 2 years? Maybe not. And I get what you're saying, that the forecasters are saying there's no indication to say that that's going to happen in the next 24. But this is a 120-month model. This is a 10-year model. And we built it in last time and told the community that we're taking a very fiscally conservative approach to budgeting by building in what is most likely. If you were a betting man in Vegas, you'd bet a lot of money that something was coming at some point in the next 10 years. So my question is, why aren't we building that in? That's what we told the community we were going to do last time.
So I guess the really simple answer is, as staff, we weren't convinced that we have enough evidence to plan that in. Ultimately, this is your forecast. You want us to put in recessions? We'll do that. This is just, again, this is staff that sat here and worked on it and know these things, and this was our recommendation to you. I could say in 2018, the forecast kind of passed everyone's muster that, yeah, this is the way we're all feeling. Feeling that a recession is going to be here. It's going to start slowing down pretty soon. And I guess from our position as staff, we're not saying just throw all caution to the wind. It's saying, yeah, we could put in a recession. When do you want it in there? How deep do you want it to go? And how long do you want it to last? Is it a recession that's about people not spending as much money on retail and travel? Or is it something like in 2007 where the whole world changed and that massively affected what property values were, and it went in and it had a lot of changes to what our property values do too. So ultimately this is a judgment, and we're putting this out to you to get it to a point where you like it and you feel comfortable with it.
So another one I'm a little uncomfortable with, and I'm wondering where this research might have been, and you said with me at the TBID or last time we tag teamed it, but one of the things that we've been presented with from Visit SloCal is a dip of 2 to 3% for the next 2 years in TOT, because we've got 2,000 hotel rooms coming online in the county of San Luis. And yet our model isn't acknowledging that.
I guess I would say my point is we've looked at all those factors, right? So we get Visit SloCal, and they talk about the number of units or hotel rooms that will be coming on. And that could very much affect TOT. I'm looking at the strength that our city is seeing right now when it comes to hotel visits. We have a new hotel open, so our numbers might be slightly different from what the county as a whole or another city in the county would see. And right now, all of our data is indicating pretty strong metrics in TOT.
What it's showing. On TOT, 1,029,648 in 2018-19, 1,141,500 in 2019-20, the year we're in. So that's what we have. We have actuals to look at. So that's what drives it. I think one thing I would just caution everyone is, I know, Madam Mayor, what you're saying is very valuable, and those are revenue projections that we need to really look at and make sure if we want to factor in the recession. But it's not just about revenue when it comes to a city. It's also about...
Of course not. I'll get to the expenditure side.
But there was that savings that we're getting that's resulting from the unfunded liability pay down. That's causing it to come out better than it may seem to by virtue of just looking at revenue.
So speaking of expenditures,
okay.
Where is funding Briscoe in the model?
So this is your general fund, and the assumption would be, much like with Measure 06 and the advisory measures, that we'd be recommending money for Briscoe would come out of 06, and that's not a part of your general fund.
Okay. So if we are making the assumption in this model that we're not going to have a downturn, that things are going to continue to grow, we've got TOT growing, we've got sales tax growing year over year and compounding, how do we build in that there's no salary increases for 4 years straight? How would we make that argument to our bargaining units?
So again, I think that's not the intent. The intent is, when we talk, we follow direction from the council of what their bargaining terms are, okay? I don't know why we didn't put those numbers in there before, but it was a question. We don't have that knowledge. Was it because we're in the middle of negotiations and we don't want to put that out there? I don't know. All I know is that we can show you those numbers of what it looks like, 2% increases in COLA for the 10-year period.
So you're just saying that what you filled in there is what's on the books?
That's what happened in the last 2018 forecast, was those were zeros.
Right, but if we built in everything from the 2018 forecast, we would have built in a recession, too.
No, that was just that particular, the PERS. That was in on the PERS page of the 2%, so we just left it out because it was highlighted. And that was an assumption on my part that they should be zeros, and then realizing now they probably... We should have put 2% in there.
Okay.
And there's two schools of thought on putting a COLA into a forecast or into a budget. The first one is you build in two, and then the union groups kind of think, okay, well, I know I'm going to get at least two. The second school of thought is that you don't build in a COLA, and then you have a fund balance, and so then the council has the discretion to decide the percentage at the time of negotiation as well, just...
Doesn't it have, though, 2% picking up again later in the model? So I'm confused by that.
Yeah, it does. It has 2% picking up again, and for some reason there were those 4 years highlighted zero.
Hmm. Well, and in theory, we had built in a recession, so there would be no increases. And so in this one, if we didn't have it built in, then we would need to put that back.
Maybe that's the answer. I think
okay.
You got it.
Again, referencing the Beacon forecast, the population growth countywide is 0.01%, and the highest is Atascadero at 0.02, but we've got ours built at 1%, which isn't... It seems like it's trivial, except for there's other places where it says the multipliers go with population. So that's informing a lot of the other parts of the model.
I think 1% is an accurate estimation of population growth, what we've seen historically in this city. It's probably really about 0.8. But when I see 1% in this, I feel like it's in the ballpark here. So we can do that. We can change that to 0.2%. We can tell you what it changes. It probably doesn't change much in the formula it's got.
No, I guess that where why I'm poking at all these pieces is because and your graphs kind of showed at the end, if we adjust this one number, these lines don't move very much. But when we start talking about the overall assumption of how we're approaching a 10-year forecast, those numbers can move drastically based on piling up a bunch of multipliers. And I think that's a really important part of our discussion because, you know, you said the farther we go out, the more skeptical we are, but there's no skepticism in this model for 10 years. That it assumes status quo growth for the next 120 months. So I guess why I'm bristling and why I chose to go first is because it's not just using this to look at the two-year budget. We used this last time to make critical decisions that were long-term decisions. And if we're not going to do that with this model, then we don't need to do a 10-year forecast. It's not really telling us anything if we're not going to really try and get this right. And so I guess I don't find value in a status quo 10-year budget. I mean, a 10-year outlook, because it's not really, all these things aren't really adding up. And that's why I approached you about this beforehand. So I don't like doing this out in public at the dais, but I couldn't get the information. So I guess I think it's important. I look forward to hearing from the rest of the council of some of the assumptions that they want to see built in here so that we can have a really robust discussion of what kind of tool this can be used for the decision-making that's in front of this council. So with that, I will throw it to Councilmember Barnidge.
Thank you. So some of my questions were knocked off by the mayor, but then I guess overall, as Karen said, you know, we had some pretty tough decisions to make, and if you look at the 2018 forecast, it was pretty depressing. I mean, it was. And so now we're looking at this 2 years later. It's 2 years within the 10-year forecast, and it just seems like it's drastically different, and maybe the economy out there is different. Personally, I feel like everybody's a little tentative because of all this growth that we've had for so many months. So in my household, we're still sort of tightening our belts and being sure that, because I feel like a recession is coming. Now, I don't really have much to base that on except what the experts say. And if the experts say, I read in some of the information I looked up online that I think in, let me find it really quick. Australia, well, it's now on fire. This is an old article, has experienced steady economic growth since 1991, and it's possible for the U.S. economy to keep trending upward. That was written 2 years ago by an expert. But I think that with just kind of right out of the gate, what I think about is I hear about people leaving the state all the time. I hear about people having to drive that work in AG, and they have to drive from Orcutt to be able to afford to live here. The fires that we have, the drought, just overall, I feel like it's a little bit uncertain still. And especially looking at the 2020 forecast and the 2018 forecast and how much we've anticipated that sales tax will go up. Those are some decent numbers, especially because they were so far down.
Nicole, can you put the chart up that she's looking at? She's looking at that chart from the email, and that way people at home can see what she's referring to. Thank you.
So with some of the uncertainties that I mentioned, I think there's not a lot of rentals. There's a rental right around the corner from me that went on the market last night, and they have, 50 applicants for this one bedroom. So I think the rental market, the housing market, we might be in for another drought. There's just uncertainty. And then you put into that, you figure in that our retail, the way we buy things, is completely changing. And there's so many people that are buying online that I have heard from commercial brokers that chain stores don't even want to locate anywhere but the freeway. They won't even go on like a Grand Avenue because they're having to make their stores smaller because they're having to sell online to keep up with that. So I think that's another uncertain thing that we're not sure
exactly how that's going to affect us, and I feel like we're right in the middle of that with the retail sales totally drastically changing compared to what they were even 2 years ago. I think they're really different. So that's just sort of my out-of-the-gate thoughts, and I felt like I think the council needs to discuss this, and I know it's a forecast, but I think that we need to maybe be a little bit more conservative, and we need to figure some sort of a little dip in some way, not sure what. But here are some questions. Okay, so we have the unfunded liabilities is $20 million, and I know we've done really well with that, and I commend the council for that. What are other cities in the county with their unfunded liabilities? Because I know a lot of people, when we talked about this before, were disenchanted, but I think that we're doing pretty well compared to other cities, although it doesn't necessarily sound like it.
So the data I have, it's always 2 years back. The latest I could get was 2017. They don't reflect if we've paid down money. So you know, we've paid down $5 million. I'm well aware of that. Pismo Beach has paid down millions of dollars. I assume other cities are doing it. So I don't want to make any of my colleagues mad if I'm giving out information that doesn't reflect that. But if you were to look at this, Rover Beach owes about $11.6 million in unfunded liabilities, Pismo Beach $17.5 million, Arroyo Grande $20 million, Morro Bay $23 million, Atascadero $25 million, Paso Robles $38 million, and the city of San Luis Obispo $150 million.
Okay, Lord. Okay, that's depressing. All right, what, and
thanks,
then, I think that we were the number 14 best in the state as far as, I don't know what the title is, but I remember
so
that.
The number was like this. If you ranked all the cities based on how much their CalPERS costs are going to go up, we were the 14th least to go up. So we were number 14. And there was 560 cities that were in worse shape than us.
It was as a function of the size of the general fund, correct?
There's ways to look at that. So, you can look at this per capita, what have you. And you also have to look at every city's different, and economies of scale changes. I don't think you can just say, well, a city twice the size of ours should have twice the CalPERS thing. It's not that easy, but we owe a substantial amount of money, and as Carolyn said, probably something that for you to think about every time you come to a budget, if you have more money in your reserves than your policy, is probably the best thing you can do. And of course, we do analysis before everyone just to make sure, but it's to pay it towards CalPERS. That is where the costs are coming, and they're big. The needle a lot.
Okay, thank you for that. And I had the other question about the paying off the chunks of CalPERS, and my question was, when would we, so staff obviously is looking at that every time we're looking at the budget, and you're coming to council, you're going to look at, hey, how much money we possibly have that we could throw at that, at the unfunded liabilities. Okay. So referencing that graph up there, from the forecast of 2018, that's a different question that was answered. I guess the property tax, the 5.3, that's the actual, so you actually receive that increase and that number from the county, correct, on the sales tax, the property tax, fiscal year 2021.
Mm-hmm.
That came directly from the county.
It's a forecast from the county.
Yeah. It's a forecast from the county. Okay.
Fantastic.
Okay. And then the sales tax increasing 2020 onward. Again, at the 2018 forecast, you can see we definitely had these negative numbers. Is that just from staff's assumption that we are, why those big changes in those numbers?
Yeah, that came in this
this document right here, the HDL, the company that we use, they sent this to me and gave me their forecast for, and I used the exact numbers.
And that's HDL. We contract with them, so those are the forecasts from HDL for Arroyo Grande, not like an average of a city.
No.
That.
No, not at all. It's for Arroyo Grande, and it's based on industry group, a listing going down as to, like, for example, food and drugs, fuel, and they have amounts, numbers, and they give you an overall percentage. And then I use these exact numbers.
Okay, thank you for that. Let's see. I think those, hang on, those are my only questions right now. Thank you.
Councilmember Paulding.
Appreciate the presentation. How frequent is it that a city will undertake a 10-year financial forecast as opposed to a 2-year?
As opposed to a 2-year? It kind of depends on the city, but most cities do 10-year forecast. And especially those cities that are concerned about cost or their general fund, they're very, you know, concerned about it going down. They want to see, or maybe want to see it going up. Maybe it's in a negative condition. So it could be those reasons, or it could just be, you know, good, everything's fine, but we still want to see what's going on over 10 years.
And then update it every 10, but along the way, assumptions are changed, like was discussed, every 2 years through the budget cycle.
Through
process.
The budget cycle, correct.
Another option is, you know, looking at Grover Beach. They hired a consultant to do their 10-year forecast, and it's someone who's in the area, well-known, and maybe that is something that gets towards consistency if that's something you want to think about in the future, is they've done a 10-year and they have an outside person do it.
That's, like, segues into my next question, which was, we have HDL on contract to assist in projections and forecasting, specifically with regard to sales tax, not property tax, but we use the county for 1 year.
Right.
But HDL hasn't looked at our overall forecast and challenged independently the assumptions we've made. These are
no, they only go out 5 years. They don't go out 10. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's just as a matter of general practice.
General practice.
Okay.
Right.
If you don't mind putting up the slide that actually showed the increases, the projected increases in property tax, sales tax, etc., I want to ask a question relating to what actually went into that. So when we see those numbers go up, is that a result of specific policy decisions that were made by the council to encourage more economic development, for example? And then the second part of that is in the reverse, what assumptions do we make if we're going to build a recession back into the model, specifically with regard to those revenues?
Yes. So is that the one?
I forget the title. It had bullet points.
It was the email, I think.
It was before the email, but...
This one, not that one?
Yeah.
Like all the line items, or no?
Yeah, it had line items showing the actual projected increases for at least property tax, sales like tax.
Page 6.
Was it page 6?
Page 6.
I think that was the first one.
Man, 2010 was not a good year without having PowerPoint on there and everything. We've gone back to the dark ages.
We'll just stick to the, you know, general answer. I've pretty much framed the question. Should I repeat the question, or was it unclear?
I see if I can answer it. I'll see if it's what
okay.
The answer makes sense. Basically, with how we, I used the property tax from the county and the amount that it went up, and then talked to a gentleman that worked at HDL in the property tax section, and he said he had seen with other cities in the area that if, for example, it was 6%, that generally he would have predicted it would stay at 6%
for several years. So, but they look at it every year, and they can reevaluate just like we did. So that's where I got the number. I put that in, and whatever, those then just kept going with probably, I think I went 5% each year, or I might have gone down a little bit, okay, just to be conservative. Okay, so then if for some reason we go back to that, revisit it, and I want to change those numbers, all I have to do is plug in any percentage, and it will change the amounts automatically in the revenue section. So all I have to do is enter the change as from, say, 5% to 2% or a negative, and that'll all automatically roll into the cells in my revenue for sales tax, the line item for sales tax, and change it. So is that what you were asking?
Yeah, and just to take one step back, if we were going to build factors back in,
yes,
that anticipate a recession at some point in time, which of those particular revenue sources would you adjust down? It would be property tax, sales tax, or would it, I guess, good what question. Factors would be adjusted, and how would you go to do that?
That's a good question. Sales tax would probably be the first one.
Okay.
And then it's property tax, as Mr. Bergman mentioned, that he doesn't change that much, at least not that quickly. However, I noticed the property tax had a few negatives at some points along the way, and we don't know what's happening with PG&E and the Diablo Canyon. So, and I know that is the top property tax revenue source for the county. So that's PG&E; they're number one in the top 10. So, in reality, if we had information on that, that would be a good time to put either a negative or, you know, whatever year that's something that's going to happen, that change. But I don't have information from the county at this point to be able to understand that. But that would be, right, that would be a good example of that. Yeah.
That might be a good follow-up action item if that data is available. When we look at the 2% versus the 0% for salary increases over time, obviously we've had that discussion, and I'm sure the council will discuss that more. If we added 2% back in for the next 3 or 4 years where it was zero, do we see how much of a difference would that make in our...
Yeah, it was
graph. That was the... Okay, that showed.
So that's what happens.
And that's where we go below the minimum fund balance, right?
It doesn't look that way.
We don't go below it, but we're skimming right along.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Assuming no other changes to the model.
Correct.
Okay, thanks. In general, obviously, this whole exercise didn't contemplate the additional revenue that would result from a sales tax increase, because that would be, like our Measure 06, separate funds, not part of the general fund process. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's possible it could be in the general fund, it could be out of the general fund. We don't know, and it seemed like it was not part of this conversation.
That's where we feel. A final just comment, we'll make comments before, I do want to just make sure that we reiterate the fact that this does reflect, in my opinion, a lot of really good work and all the decisions that were made to pay down the pension and to right size and everything. So I just want to leave it at that.
Councilmember George.
It's a lot of numbers. Thank you for the hard work that you put into this, because it's just a lot of numbers, and I appreciate you taking the time and being as thorough as you can be with trying to look into a crystal ball, which is essentially what we're trying to do here. I do struggle with some disparities from how drastically different 2018's forecast was and today's forecast. So I think, I guess I'll just start at the top. Circling back to Mayor's questions regarding the 7.4 FTEs, I'm just trying to clarify. So when they got replaced with lower positions, were those positions part-time and no benefits, or were they full-time but just a lower position?
Full-time, lower position, the one I'm thinking about, it probably was an associate planner, and I got it replaced with an assistant planner.
So when I look at the population increase, and it shows to study every year. We're going to have a 1% increase. You know, reading the Hourglass report on housing and not housing, on the workforce, and the report said 60% of the workforce might be leaving our area just because housing is such an issue. When we did the demographics with the housing units and the population, was there any way to take into account the amount of people that would be leaving, because it's such a different number than what it used to be because of our housing crisis?
I guess I'd look at that data and say probably the Hourglass study, and I don't have it in front of me, but it probably said that 60% of the people are struggling. I don't know if 60%
considering
of the
people
they're considering leaving.
But
my point is, if they're considering leaving at some point, it's going to get to a nexus where they're actually going to leave. And so my question is, do we take that into account in this? Because it's just consistent that we're going to grow 1% every
year. It's just based on, again, it's the data that we have consistently, the Department of Finance, Census. When you take those numbers, it's all about, like I said, 0.8 to 1% a year generally. I don't think it's that out of a range, or I think it's in the range. And quite frankly, I don't think it really affects much in the model, but that's just a guess. I mean, if it decreased 60%, yes. But if it's 5%, we could do a little bit of testing in the model, but it probably doesn't change the model much.
While you're on that 1%, because I think it's important. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's how built out are we, Arroyo Grande? Aren't we like 90? I can't remember. I mean, I haven't probably had...
So I think we could say 80 to 90% built out, but I guess it depends on what you think built out means. Does that mean we stop at the end of it, or does it keep going somewhere else, right? I don't think the state is saying there's build out anymore.
Okay. I'm just wondering if that Beacon report, that 0.2%, I wonder if that disparity between the 0.2 and the 1% might be taking into account our housing crisis and people not coming into the area, because where are they going to live when they get here? So I just didn't know that was something that we took into account.
It's a tough one too, because we do know that even though more housing units aren't built, we do generally know that there's more people living here, right? So multi-generations in a house, it's difficult. And again, when we're at this scale where this is a forecast, we're trying to just make sure we don't have any exceptionally, significantly wrong numbers, right? This is get it in the ballpark and see what it does.
So when we're looking at the sales tax revenue, and it shows that it's just going to be a steady 2.1 increase, across the board for the next 8 years, is that taking also, I guess I'm looking more at trends and where things are going, does that take into account the retail environment and how it's changing and how brick and mortars are becoming more and more less? They're not as abundant. So are we taking into account, or is that are we offsetting the brick and mortar businesses with something else that keeps the sales tax the same rate?
Yeah, those first 5 years are from HDL, and they absolutely take into account the brick and mortar, because I've been to seminars with them, and they talked about exactly what the mayor was saying, or somebody on the council was just mentioning, and the fact that, the stores, there's so much internet sales. I think it was you. Yeah.
But a lot of internet sales don't necessarily collect sales tax for our area. So I guess I'm just trying to understand what HDL was taking into account, or where they're saying that the difference will come from.
Yes, we'd have to talk to them and have them explain exactly, but I can generally say that they look specifically at Arroyo Grande when they make these forecasts. And they also take into account where the sales tax is coming from, and historically, where is it going down? Where are we losing sales, and where are they going up? And I know they do that.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. The property tax, we're at 5%, 5%, and then we just dip down in 2024 to 1.5%, and then that's consistent. Is there a reason for that giant dip?
Some of it actually was, I did my best because we only had the 1 year, so I wanted to be conservative, and I did review the prior 2018 just to see what they, how they were doing it, and I'm looking at 2018 right now for property tax, and it dips way down in it's to zero in 23, 24. So I know that I was looking at that and wanted to keep it lower because it had been in the prior forecast.
But the 2018 was in the negative, and then it went back up into the positive, whereas the 2019, this one actually, it dips down. So it's different than the 2018 model.
Different.
So I'm not understanding where the rationale is. Why do we go from 5% increase to all of a sudden 1.5, and then that's just stagnant? So what happens between 23, 24, and 24 and 25 that we see such a significant drop in our property tax?
And again, it was literally, it was my projections, and I felt more confident in five years of projecting at the consistent percentage of, I believe, 5%. And then the reason I went down is because it was down in this forecast, in the prior forecast. So it was...
But it went up, is what I'm saying. It didn't go down, it went up in the prior forecast.
Are you looking at 23, 24?
I'm looking at property tax. It goes in 22, 23, it's negative 3.
Negative 3, I've got it.
And our 22, 23 is 5.
Okay, because it was, I projected 5 years at 5.
So that negative 3 was part of the recession that was planned in the 2018.
Okay.
Negative 3 is going to happen.
Yeah.
We're not sure if 5 is going to happen, but it's kind of that best guess of in there.
Yeah. So a 1 point literally is just a... There's no equation that you came up with to see that significant drop in property tax.
There's just, no equation. No. It was too far out. At that point, it's just a matter of the best I could look at, and the fact that having discussed with HDL and them saying that it would probably be the same in for about 5 years, and then looking over at the 2018, the fact that it was a negative 3, I just couldn't see that.
Okay.
So I gave it my best estimate.
So basically for 5 years you're comfortable because those were HDL numbers that you were comfortable with, and then after that you weren't comfortable, so you kind of went with a conservative number just because we couldn't forecast further out than that.
Yes, okay. But I would like to say that it was just a conversation I had with them, because they don't actually have, their numbers aren't exact as if we had them as our consultants, because they'd be able to review much more clearer. But I did use
and they want us to pay for it.
Yes. I was lucky to get the information, and he seemed like he knew what he was talking about. So.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. It's just, for me, there is a delicate weave of all of these numbers and how they play off of each other. So when we're talking about population and housing and property tax, there should be some way that they should ebb and flow similarly, and I don't know, that's me, I guess you're shaking your head, so you're saying no, that's not how it works, but if we're saying that we have these housing units and we're seeing a giant dip in property tax, that just confuses me to all get out. I don't understand why that would be. I would say if we saw a dip in housing units, I guess I won't beat it into the ground, but that drastic change is uncomfortable for me, because I can't justify it. The TOT, did we take into account possible new construction in our area, new hotels in our area? So that increase, does that increase include new hotel inventory?
I don't, so we have Agrarian that was new, and mm-hmm. it's coming online, but we did not forecast any specific new hotel. Okay. Like we assumed it's coming on in the next year or two.
Okay. So this is not assuming any new building. It's just what we currently have. Thank you. I think those were all my questions. Thank you so much for all your hard work. I know that it was a lot, and I appreciate you being here as interim, and we wish you well.
Thank you so much.
I know Friday's your last day.
I know.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you as well. Appreciate the work that you've done. My goodness, there's a lot to this and a lot to figure out and a lot of assumptions to make. I just want to follow up where Councilmember George left off a little bit, where you were talking about where you got to the five-year point and you just decided, you know what, it'd be just better off to go a little conservative here, reduce the numbers, because it looked like not only did it reduce in sales tax, well, sales tax was straight across, property tax was reduced as well as TOT was reduced. It looks like about a percent. It actually starts off high, then tapers out at 1.5. And we didn't project anything coming in the future. So, you know, I was not on the council 2 years ago, but I sat through many of the budget meetings and at the 10-year forecast, and it was really devastating at the time. It was shocking information, I think, that really put some panic in our citizens that felt like, oh my gosh, the city's going bankrupt and things like that. And now to look at this, it's a very promising picture, but it really is a lot different from the one in 2018. So I just have to ask the question, is there a value in a 10-year forecast? I'm sure there is, but our numbers are so far apart between the two, and at the five-year point, you decided I need to go conservative. I'm just trying to get in my mind, is there a true value to what does it accomplish in the long run?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it does, it's kind of like any budget. So the longer you look, further you can look out and feel, I know you do need to feel a sense of accuracy about it, though, because that's why you do a budget, so it doesn't, you don't have any surprises. So there you have it. So I do believe it's very valuable because you can you should be able to make decisions, but you have to also, you can't make a decision until you feel like your budget makes sense. So if council, sounds like council's feeling a little unsure about the revenue, and as far as anyone who predicts revenue like this, it is a difficult process. So, and we're trying to take as much into consideration, but we can make lower revenue estimates. I would stick with whatever HDL said for sales tax for sure, because for the 5 years, and then we can take it down lower, or I think that one I don't think is that big a fluctuation. And the property tax, we know that we'll know what it is every year. As soon as the year comes. So we can go lower on that too. So we can change these revenue estimates. And the other piece is, again, that any savings in expenditure is the same as revenue.
Right.
So that's the other piece that probably should be looked at very carefully to make sure we haven't overstated something, even though it looks really wonderful right now, but you still can overstate where you've put in an expenditure that's way too high. And that can easily happen in this forecast because we're still getting the information from PERS about how much lower our payments are because of our pay downs. And we also don't know when we're going to pay all of it off. So there's those predictions are just as important as a prediction for revenue. And then there's the understatement of expenditures. We don't want to do that either. So it's always good to have a second set of eyes looking at this and then asking questions. And then what we seek to do is to do a 10-year forecast because it's hugely important to make decisions, and we need to just revisit it and make changes if you're not comfortable with it.
Okay. No, I appreciate the answer, and it's an honest answer. And I'm just trying to square away in my own mind because for the last, these are the only two 10-year forecast budgets I've ever worked with, and just comparing the two are so extreme from one another, it seems. When we did the old assumptions in 2018, did we use HDL at that time? So we used,
okay. For the sales tax.
Okay, just for the sales tax then. And then I think in 2018, I thought there was discussion that the agrarian was going to be included in TOT, and that was that was included for the 10 years? Okay. And then maybe we're actually realizing it, and that's why we went up 11% last year? Okay. Now, this might be a facetious question. I don't know. I'm thinking of CalPERS. And if we are so positive about the 10-year forecast, I would think PERS would be positive about the 10-year forecast. I believe they're 70% funded right now. With a positive forecast, perhaps they would be even more funded than they are now, but I'm certain that's something we could never depend on, to the point that we would be relieved of any fiscal obligations should they be extremely successful in the next 10 years.
Yeah. Did you see the market yesterday and today?
Yeah, that's too bad. Right. And I did have a question on just the expenditures page on page 7. When we talk about unspent appropriations, is that like salary savings and things we just don't, we thought we'd spend money on and we didn't?
The unspent appropriations, that I'm not exactly sure what that is, but it's been in the forecast. Do you know what that is? It's been in the forecast, and I pretty much just
I think it's trying to anticipate that rollover from salary savings or if we didn't do projects. And I think Jim Guthrie hates it, and but it's in there, so that's what we have. So.
Okay. So I was just trying to understand what that was because it wasn't clear to me. And just for my own math and understanding, when I look at the ending fund balances, the percentage for 19 and 20, we're at 15%, and that was because we spent the $5 million for PERS. And then we're slowly going up to a point where in 2 years we'll be at 20% at our target. And then it increases exponentially from there, all the way up to 45% out at year 10. The value of that, if I'm doing my math right, is like $5.8 million, which seems like a lot of money. And it just seems, I guess I did my math right then.
It would be the total of all of the surpluses.
Okay, so that's
And that's what it should be. That sounds a little bit high to me, but
I think the surpluses, when I added them, they only came up to like 3.3.
That's what I came up with.
So I wasn't sure. I was trying to figure out where the rest of that money came from. I even had my wife sit down with me, who does this stuff all the time, and she couldn't explain it to me. So I'm not going to put her on the spot, though.
I can answer a couple of your questions.
Yes.
The unspent appropriations is salary savings.
Okay.
Which is pretty much what Jim touched on. And then the fund balance carries forward. So the 45% is associated with the 4.66. So $4.6 million.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, I understand that, but it just, the difference was quite a bit of money. So.
Yeah. How come it's...
And I was trying to figure out how that money added up. Above the overage on the revenues.
So yeah, the revenues are going up.
Right.
Because we're entering higher revenue percentages as we go. And expenditures, the only way they're going down would be the CalPERS funding. So
that's the cash savings of paying interest. We're saving that interest, and that's where you're starting to see that in the out years.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. That's all the questions I had.
And I have a couple of follow-ups.
I have one.
Go ahead.
Well, I guess in talking about the value of a 10-year forecast and just seeing how subjective it really is, to me, to some extent, well, first of all, it's really important for policymaking, and it's good that we did it, and it's great that we're having this discussion. My first question is, how binding is this forecast on what we do? Obviously, the two-year budget is what's really binding for our, our actual policy implementation, correct?
Yes, the two-year budget is binding by resolution. So this is simply for information purposes only. So it's obviously we could even change this and bring it back and have you look at it. And
it's a tool for you. So if again, it's as valuable as you want to make it. Okay, frankly, right? And it does help you see a little bit of 2 years and what that might do to the future. But maybe that's something that we put a value on it and it's related to that.
So to that end, to me, having multiple scenarios to look at based on a really conservative set of assumptions and then, by contrast, more liberal set of assumptions to then base policy decisions off of would seem to be helpful. And I don't know if that's common practice. Is that common practice to provide multiple forecasted scenarios?
It just depends on the forecast. So it can be brought back and have brought many times. Like when a company will come in to do it, they'll just give you the one. And but with staff, you can have them go back and do more.
Okay, thank you.
So a couple of the follow-ups I have. First of all, I found the I'm still perplexed by the 7.4 FTEs and the revenue change, and I found the old staff report with my notations here, and the chart, I know you can't refer to it, it's item 11B from April of 2018. It says the total savings from losing all those FTEs was $596,900, and then there's an asterisk under it from staff in the graph saying, after accounting for mitigations, which are discussed below, net savings from staffing is $447,000. So that's almost $200,000 off from the savings that we anticipated. So I'm still struggling with that.
I don't have the document in front of me either. I would assume, this is a big assumption, but I would assume that is talking about fiscal year 18-19, and Carolyn is referencing, I believe, 19-20, and these bullet points, and so...
it was a double year...
It was?
Yeah. Okay. Based on what it says here anyway. Okay, and then I need one more clarification. So thank you so much for putting up with all of our questions, because you know this council so well and you know they're coming. But I heard with regard to the general fund and possible surpluses, I heard three different statements in the conversations tonight. So the first one I saw in the presentation said there's a surplus in all 10 years, getting us to 20% reserves, and the surplus is anywhere from $80,000 to $532,000. Okay, and then in the city manager's additions that were put in, it said we were behind by $530,000 or $44,000. So in the first one, it said we were ahead on all those years, but in the one from city manager, it said we were behind. Yeah. And so, I got very confused by that.
Sorry, I'll try to clarify that.
So it should be.
So it's not so much the fund balance. I'm not talking about the fund balance. I'm talking about our expenses went up 5.88% and our revenues went up 2.18%. That's the difference. What I'm talking about, what we're ahead or behind, is our costs are going up faster than our revenues are coming in this year, is what I was talking about, not the fund balance.
The year we're in, right? 1920? Is that the one? That one or 2021?
I thought you were talking about both years.
Oh, okay.
And it said it looked at how much revenues were coming in, how much they were increasing.
You're pointing at something we can't see, so maybe you can help us out there.
It's on page 7.
I think Jim's, this is Jim's slide. But
it's Jim.
Jim's.
There it is. There's my slide. So here's what I'm saying. It's revenues for 2021 is going up by 2.81% from last year. That's about $519,000. But the point is, our expenditures are going up by $1 million. So that's where what I'm talking about. We're behind by 530. So it's more of telling you that in this 1 year, we're projecting that the expenses are going to go up faster than your revenues by about $530,000.
So in terms of a 10-year forecast, the 2021
fiscal year, we're not building those reserves.
I'm trying to
understand the value of what's being said here in relation to whether or not we have a surplus or not.
I'm not equating those two to the surplus. I'm just making a statement of what I find when I look at those numbers. And our costs are going up by $1 million, and our revenues have only gone up by $500,000 in that year. That's what we're predicting.
The point is, I'm
trying to show that expenditures rise really, really fast, and revenues are rising fast. They're a lot harder to.
But our general fund is still growing at that time in those years?
According to page 7, because
of the surplus.
The actions in 18 and 19 of cutting back staff, right? You closed the gap. You did this not because of the fear of the recession, but you closed the gap because it was a gap and it wouldn't have worked. You would have been spending a lot more money. So I just think you're... I'm sorry, I meant to get more clarity in the idea of giving you a general idea of what our finances are doing in that year, but please don't add it to that. That's going to affect the surpluses necessarily.
Okay,
use the model.
Those aren't deficit numbers.
Those are not deficit numbers.
Okay, well, because then there was another number of $125,000 that was in the very beginning of the staff report, and that talks about a surplus.
Mm-hmm.
But so then
that's another number in addition,
121.
Yes. Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's 18%, correct?
Right. And so when I heard Jim, when he was first giving his presentation, then there was the $500,000 that was actually negative. Because of the so can you just one more time? Sorry, just explain the 125 difference that's in the staff report that I had written down that actually I crossed off because I thought I was clear, and now how it's I'm not understanding that.
Yes, the surplus is simply the revenues exceeded the expenditures in 2021 by $125,000. So that.
But then that's not what that slide just said.
The slide before this, Nicole, yeah. If you could. The numbers, the monetary numbers with the percentage is talking about just the increases in these things. They're not talking about what you already have, what the other things have been increasing. This is one component of all of your revenue. So,
those are isolated figures.
Absolutely. And it's just saying, don't read this with the 10-year forecast in your fund balance. This is just saying our revenues increased. The rate went up by 2.81%, but our expenditures have risen faster.
So,
but
Jim, I think the slide before this one explains that.
Okay.
So maybe that might be helpful. Because you were very specific with where those numbers came from. So what you're saying is those numbers are, if you're just looking at those compartments, then you're seeing a $530 discrepancy, but it's just those compartments. So I think it's a slide before this one that shows it. Yes.
That was the one I was looking for.
See,
earlier.
This is the one. See, if you're just talking about property taxes and
Jimmy.
TOT and sales tax, as far as revenue, and you're only talking about PERS and the those bullet points.
Thank you, Councilmember George.
That's where you're getting
got
the
it.
But it's not the whole
his revenue. And
so we have offsetting. Okay. But we have offsetting expenses that are cheaper than predicted.
Yes, and other revenues.
So
got it.
And
also,
that was very helpful. Thank
with
you.
With these numbers, when you're looking at the fund balance, we want to remember the salary savings part is not in.
That was very helpful. Wow. Okay. So that is clear as mud, and let's open this up to public comment. Would anyone like to come forward and speak on this item? Are you sure? If only to say thanks to everyone. Okay, then let's bring this back to the council. And how about we start with Council Member Paulding this time? He hasn't started one yet.
Okay.
Try to throw
Thank
it
you
around.
For that, yeah. So just to start off at the 20,000-foot perspective, again, I'd like to reiterate the fact that this, you know, looking through a positive lens, shows that the policy set by the prior council and the work implemented by staff and our city manager has paid off. The rewards that we see just as a result of paying down the pension, unfunded pension liability, are huge. And so just that policy function in and of itself is something that I think deserves quite a lot of praise. When we look at the model in general, I think that I definitely agree with the concerns that other council members have raised. I don't think we have a complete apples-to-apples comparison. There were a number of specific details raised by various council members. I think that specifically I would add in or recommend adding in the 2% for salary increases to represent a more conservative forecast. I would also factor in a recession, to be completely frank. And it's hard for us to read the tea leaves. It's a very, subjective discussion in general, but I think true fiscal responsibility should govern this process. And we're going to make some big policy decisions coming up. In fact, you know, when we look at what we've done so far, looking at our deferred maintenance specifically, and that $3.5 million in additional revenues that we need to get our roads, to a pavement condition index that is going to not be cost prohibitive over time. When we look at how we're going to bring in additional revenue in addition to a potential sales tax increase, and we're looking at specific policy decisions to increase economic development, we need to know, we need to have a very strong foundation for those policy decisions, and I would like it to be a conservative foundation, for lack of a better term. And specifically the reserve discussion, you know, I think it was mentioned in the staff presentation that we might want to relook at that. I would like to relook at that, but based on, again, a conservative model. So that's kind of, those are my high-level bullet points. The specific factors that should be adjusted, whether it's property tax, sales tax, TOT, etc., I think they all should be, and there's plenty of notes on the record from council member questions. I think TOT, actually, I would propose, and I don't know if it's the will of the council, but to have two models, one that's conservative, that looks at everything we've discussed. I would even add for the Five Cities Fire Authority the full strategic plan implementation model, which is predicated on a complete status quo, which would not be the blended model that appeared to be a two-station, two-agency model. I would go very conservative there. I would go conservative on the TOT, not factoring in any future developments such as hotels, conservative on the salary increases, and sales tax. And then on the, if for lack of a better term, the more liberal model, I would make some assumptions, like we're going to build one hotel in the next, year, two-year period, and what TOT results, that the economy is going to do great, and give us, I don't know, two extremes, perhaps, to deal with, to then base policy decisions. Those are my comments.
Councilmember George.
Thank you. So my first comment is the 10-year forecast is so drastically different today than in 2018 that I would be extremely uncomfortable making any long-term decisions based on what we currently have in front of us as a 10-year forecast. Maybe 5 years, but 10 years definitely not. That being said, I definitely want to commend the city for making the decision, the tough decision, to pay down PERS when you did and saving us a lot of money. And, that 7% interest rate is kind of scary. That's really high. And it could go higher. We just don't know. I was very excited to see that based on this forecast, we might hit our 20% reserve, and that's really exciting. But then I hear that if we do have money in reserve, we should pay down PERS more. And so that's really tempting, and that's something that I think the council should discuss, because I know in one of our previous meetings we had said, as a council, we wanted to get back up to that 20%. That being said, you know, if we have a 20% reserve and we do have an economic downturn, we're going to need that money. So it also scares me to want to use that money and pay down PERS, and then we might need it, and in this forecast, it's not, a downturn isn't accounted for. So, you know, with all of the different, you know, five cities fire authority, our unfunded state mandates, $600,000 last year just for stormwater. So we just have so many expenses that it's comfortable for me to know that we have a 20%, or we can get to a 20% reserve. Is that the best way to use our money, is to hoard it like that? I don't know. So that's something that I would like to have further discussion with council on. I'm curious about the multiple scenario option that Councilmember Paulding is asking for. At the same time, I'm hesitant with that, because that's just even more for us to be like, oh, whoa, you know, and when we have to make decisions, which one do we use? Again, I like that concept, and I don't know how that would work. So I think it's just my inexperience and not seeing that. And maybe if I had them before me, that would be clearer. I do agree with Councilmember Paulding that we should take into account a downturn. What year we take that into account, maybe we need to do some more research and reach out to some people who might have better answers than we have. I think that the future looks bright. I'm very excited about at least the next 5 years. It's definitely a different scenario than 2018, and I'm excited about that. So I don't want to leave this meeting feeling, I don't want you to leave this meeting feeling defeated, because you guys did just excellent work, and we really appreciate it. And I'm sorry that we had to nitpick so much, but when we see things, hopefully as a group and as a team, which I believe we are, we can then take all of this and actually come up with a forecast that all of us are comfortable with actually using. Because at the end of the day, the whole point of this exercise is to have a 10-year forecast that we can rely on when we have to make really big decisions. I don't have many more changes other than what was already brought to you this entire evening. I appreciate all of your hard work, and I thank you. That's it.
Councilmember Burnage.
Thank you. So I think it's a little bit ironic that I pulled that 2-year article out, and it talked about Australia's growth and how it's just continued. I would imagine that Australia is going to have a bit of a downturn now because of the devastating fires. So I think that just helps to show us that even though everything, most things look rosy, even in maybe AG, I just think in different areas, perhaps it's not quite as rosy, and if there's a fire or there's people that are moving out because of jobs and we have another drought, which it's not looking really wonderful as far as just the rain for this year. Hopefully we can rebound next year. All of that really plays into the uncertainty, and even if we don't necessarily have a downturn, I think if people are concerned that we might, spending takes a little bit of a dive because they're conservative. And so I would bet my life in 10 years we're going to see some sort of a dip in the city, probably in all of California. So for all kinds of reasons that I've already gone over, you know, the rental market, the housing market, all of that. So I agree with building in the COLAs. I also see what Nicole shared with building them in or not building in, and I can kind of see both sides. But I do think I err more on the side of building those in, just so that we really know where we probably are going to go. I don't know if... I definitely think when we tweak this, we definitely... sales tax, I think. And I guess I'm surprised by HDL because they're really well regarded. We've used them forever. I mean, I read their quarterly reports they give to us. They're very detailed. But I don't know if I think that's a little bit of a too rosy of a picture, and I just rather tweak that. The TOT, I think that we don't know exactly, depending on what we do in the next year or two, what hotels are going to be out there. So I think that we definitely know which ones we do have, and we kind of go from there, and we don't really forecast too much of that. I, as far as Councilmember Paulding doing the more rosy outlook and then the more conservative, that sounds good, but that, I think I agree a little bit with Councilmember George. I feel like that would almost give us like this big range, and then I'd kind of be back sort of confused with what to look at. Although I think maybe if I saw them, like Councilmember George said, side by side, it might be a little bit more clear, but I don't know, I'm almost feeling like I'd rather just go with the more conservative approach just because we're so far off the 2018 forecast. So there's just this kind of big the gap there. So those are my comments right now, and I think that's it. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you very much. I, too, would like to say thank you to particularly the two council members at the time that are beside me, and the work that they did, along with the other council members and the mayor at the time, making the hard decisions to get us to a much brighter place today. And I'm very appreciative of the work that's been done to get us to this point. And although there is a big difference between 18 and now, I do believe there is a positive trend moving forward, and I'm looking forward to that positive stuff going on. But with that said, I think we need to be cautious, too. There seems like there's so many places you can go to make assumptions, and depending on who you go to, they could be helpful or not helpful, depending on the information that they provide you. And at some point, I have to trust what staff brings to me, because I do trust you, and I have always trusted you, and I appreciate the work that you bring before us. And I know that you'll do the best job possible representing what you believe is happening best with the city. And it's as long as we use reliable data, then we make our best choices and move forward. I'm more set to just a conservative approach. I'm not really into having two options to choose from. I think it's too confusing, and I think it makes it too confusing out in the public as well for people to look at that to figure out what's going on. I also feel like if we have a very rosy picture and that's not really the scenario, and we're looking to move forward with a potential increase in sales tax, I think there's going to be some competing messages there that just don't make sense. And so I just really think we need to have that conservative approach. I like the idea of building in the 2% for the salary increases throughout the entire time. Factoring in a recession, I think, is a reasonable expectation. Just it seems statistically likely that that's going to happen. I like the 20% reserve, particularly looking forward to the unknown, and I think it's a goal we should achieve. And if at the time we look forward and decide that we could use funds to pay down PERS, then that's something we can decide at the time. I still struggle in my own mind the value of the 10-year in the long run, and is a shorter time period better? I really don't know, and that's just something that I'm struggling with in my own mind. I'm curious if we ever compare to other cities in our region to see what they do as far as if they're using the same numbers and making similar projections. And for the most part, I just feel like we need to go with what we know right now in order to make the projections and stay conservative with our information, just to make sure that that would make me feel like I'd be more comfortable with the information. And let me turn the page here, make sure I got it all. That's all I have. Thank you.
So I think the reaction from the council has made it pretty clear that in terms of whether we should have two models or one, what I'd really like to see is we've already seen the one. We've already seen the really liberal one. That's the one we're looking at. So it doesn't require any work.
Last time in April, so going ahead of budget talks, we had budget balancing strategies, and that's we looked at how we were going to achieve some of the things that we might be looking at in the budget. And I think that would be a great time to come back with, as you've heard pretty much universally here, a more conservative model that will help us make decisions. And I balked more than anyone here, I think, at this because of that drastic difference between 18 and 20. For some, it's academic, and it's an academic exercise. But when you've been faced with laying off 7.4 people and the really major decisions we used that were outside of 2 years to drive those decisions, and then we get one that's so drastically different but without a whole lot of explanation of why it's different, I think that's why there was such a reaction to it. And so if it's going to be a tool that this council can use, then we need to have some methodology with that tool that not only fits the approach of the group, but also has some consistency over a couple of years. And obviously, it's going to change every 2 years as we get more information and fill in the gaps and fill in the numbers and forecasts become realities. But to change up the methodology so completely makes it really difficult for us to base long-term decisions and long-term ideas about what we want from policy. I pushed for this when I was supervisor, and I pushed for it here, and I'll continue to push for a 20% and not 15, and because one of the reasons Arroyo Grande did so well in 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, and this is before my tenure on council, is because we did have healthy reserves that helped us get through the beginnings of that Great Recession. So I think that's important, and we can always, that's part of what this tool helps us do. It helps us look forward and say, you know what, this year are we going to take 5%, put that towards PERS. We have some idea of what's coming in the next 24 to 36 months, and we can make that decision every year. We don't need to build that in. In terms of changing the formulas, I think you've heard it loud and clear. We want a recession built into this. I think, you know, again, if you were going to go make a bet in Las Vegas as to whether there was going to be a recession or not in the next 10 years, they would call you crazy if you said no. So we've got to just build something in there. And all of the multipliers kind of work together. We have to make sure that the population isn't just what we feel, but is based on data, because those drive other numbers in the model. We're going to know also if we come back with a more conservative one what the outcome of March 3rd is with regard to Five Cities Fire Authority. So we're going to have a little bit of help with that part of the model, and I think that's going to be really significant for us to take a look at as we go into budgeting. So I think that's important to build in. I think that what this, if I can sum up what the whole council is saying, is that we want a conservative model, because it's never going to hurt us to take a conservative approach to fiscal decisions, and it can come back and bite us if we don't. And so it's not too far. We don't have to build in a great recession, but we do need to build in some assumptions that follow statistical and historical models. I mean, those are pretty easy to do. So I look forward to maybe seeing a revised approach, maybe as we go into April, when we would normally see that again. So those are my comments. Did you want to add?
I just have one follow-up. I think with the admin services director, we had a different one, and now we have one, a different one, and then we're going to have a different one. Yeah. I think, unless this already exists, maybe we could make notes on what the methodology is with some of these numbers.
Yes.
So the COLA and the no, or the no COLA, or the TOT, and I mean just that we have certain things from HDL. I mean, that's a simple.
Yeah.
Of course, we get that, but that way every year, or every 2 years, we do it the same way.
Or we make an adjustment in the model, that's part of the staff
and
report.
And part of the staff report, exactly, yeah. I think that would help everybody, because even 2 years ago, I'm not remembering, there was something we brought up about numbers that were plugged in, maybe it was the COLA, I can't remember, and I was here too, but you know, we're doing a lot of work, you guys are too, and so we don't remember, especially if we have turnover of staff, so that would be my suggestion.
I would definitely like to see that, because that's the information I asked for prior to the meeting and didn't get, which was what were those assumptions and methodologies. And I think that if they don't exist somewhere, maybe we could, you know, have some sort of legacy file that continues to do that. That would be really helpful.
I'll see if I can set something up.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
That'd be great. Thank you. All right. Yeah, cause, so you're going to do that, what, between now and Friday morning?
Yeah, or? I can't leave.
And no, I'm I'll so sorry that this is the first time we've seen you, and we have to say hello and goodbye at the same time. So thank you for putting up with this very diligent council that likes to get into the weeds. And
I'm very
you fielded
impressed.
That very, very well. So thank you for
Great
that.
Job. Thank you.
Well, that takes us to City Council reports, and that's me first. CJPIA is in July. The South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District has not met since last time we reported. They do meet next week, so I have not seen the agenda yet, so I will report out on that next time. The TBID did meet, and I need to find my notes, and I can't remember where I put them. The upshot is that I will have Kelly distribute to the council. I meant to bring it tonight, and I now realize it's on my living room table. There was discussion about, I think I've talked to you about doing selfie spot or selfie spots. The TBID is wanting to do those things, and there were some ideas that were floated, and there were some color pictures and a handout. I think it's the discussion was that it would potentially go through Rio Grande Public Art and then come through the public art process, and we do have process for that. But since that's ultimately a decision of the council, I thought it'd be a good idea, almost like a pre-op, to get you the copies of them and let you start to digest what's being proposed there. And if you have any direction for me on that to discuss at the next TBID meeting, that would be helpful to me. So I'll get that to Kelly and get that distributed out. And the first part of the meeting was a robust discussion of the report that Caraggio is going to be doing for visioning for building tourism. And City Manager Bergman was there for the first half of the meeting, and I was there for the second half of the meeting. So maybe Mr. we did not. We were strangers in the night. But maybe you could speak to that discussion, since I didn't hear it.
Unfortunately, the meeting started a little late, so I was there for two items. The one where they talked about they want to try to do a little research and get potentially a recommendation to your council around budget time when it comes to finding, is it a contract with Airbnb? Is it a company like Host Compliance? So we're going to where the experts are. We got Fred, who is volunteering from the Agrarian, and he will do that and help us out, and we'll be seeing that. And then the other item was people sitting, one person sitting on the Jim Guthrie panel, and that's, I wrote Vivian Krug Cotton into that, and now I have to wash her car because she joins everything, and she probably didn't want to join that one, but it's important.
Well, and the other thing, maybe you missed it, and so did I, it must have been in the interim, there's going to be a study that the TBID is commissioning with Caraggio with regard to building tourism. It's not a bummer, it's a great thing, it's just not going to be ready by the time we go through budget, and before, when I say budget, I mean we as in the TBID, not us. The TBID budget is going to come forward before the results of that survey come forward. So it's going to be a little out of order, so you may see a general line here or there in the budget in May as it comes forward, so just know that that's where that comes from. So with that, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Briscoe Halcyon has not met. Five Cities Fire Authority, we met on the 21st. biggest thing we did was approve the JPA with FARA. You're probably wondering what FARA is. It's Fire Agencies Insurance Risk Authority. So that's just our insurance company for our authority. For the integrated waste management, we didn't meet. I reported out our last meeting, but we did have individual meetings with the company that's doing our strategic plan. So it was nice to sit down and discuss some of the vision moving forward. South County Chamber of Commerce Governmental Affairs, they meet on Friday. Council Member Paulding will be attending on my behalf. I'll be attending a city selection committee on behalf of the mayor. And then also with the Government Affairs Committee, I have been attending the AG Village Steering Committee. And they had a great sidewalk sale, if you had a chance to go a couple of weeks ago. It was a really good event, and they're talking about doing that a couple of times a year. The Memorial Day Strawberry Celebration will be going on Memorial Day weekend. They'll still have Farmers Market as usual. They'll have summer concert series as usual. There'll be music and food booths. The street will be open. I think the city has already had contact with some people working on the event as far as proper placement of things so they don't get in the way and things like that. A question was asked to me about Halloween, and I checked with the city to see how much we had in funds. $125, so that's not going to cause, help with the street closure, but I'm certain we'll talk about
it. But there are people out there who offered, and it may not have been the perfect year, but they're open to it.
Okay. So if more money is available at some point privately, that's great, and I imagine in our budget sessions we'll be discussing a choice to fund that or not, or other events. I sent you an email, City Manager Bergman, about perhaps somebody from the city can contact Krista with Hello Village. She's really interested, wants to get started, and maybe now's a good time to just get the conversation rolling so we're more prepared than we were last year.
Sure, I'll read that email and more than likely follow through.
Thanks. And that's it. Thank you.
Councilmember Burnage. Nope, none of those committees have met since I last reported out.
But I got other stuff at council.
Yeah, I do. Councilmember Paulding.
Likewise, I have no updates.
Councilmember George.
So RAC meets next week, and CAPSLO met, and there were only two points that I wanted to talk about tonight. So the first one was last year, CAPSLO received a grant for Vets to Work. It is a program that places veterans, mainly homeless veterans, into jobs. And these jobs are not just part-time jobs. These are jobs that can be life-sustaining and get them into homes. And as of October, was when their fiscal year started, as of October, they have helped 106 households and placed 33 vets. So that's amazing. And so they are going in again to request another $274,000 for this upcoming year. So hopefully they'll receive that and be able to continue doing the great work that they're doing for our local vets. The next thing that they were talking about is their Head Start program is not full. And it's not full because there aren't people in need. It's not full because our poverty guidelines are so ridiculously low. They don't actually account for people who actually live in poverty because the numbers are just so low. So that's something that CAPSLO is struggling with right now. They are working to get the federal government and the state government kind of up to speed and to increase those poverty guidelines to
into reality.
So there was one of the president, she said, like, those numbers were initially based on how much a bag of groceries cost in 1960. So it's time. It's time to update. And those are my only report outs for the night. Thank you.
Thank you. That takes us to council communications. Councilmember Barnage.
Okay, I have two. The gentleman that spoke at the beginning of the meeting that is our tenant in the home back here, if I was going to ask Bill before he left, but he talked about, I guess I'm not clear if someone could email me or all of us or whatever about the putting a cap. cap on the rent, and as far as I don't remember how much it's supposed to go up for how many years. So I just, if someone could just give me a short math problem, because I was kind of confused by what he was saying. So that's all. Perfect. Perfect. Thank you. And then I also wanted to commend Lawrence Armstrong, that is our it was code enforcement, now it's called Neighborhood Services Officer with the city. So I tend to get a lot of, and maybe you all do, out in the community, messages, emails, what have you, of things that are don't look so great around town. I don't know. I think they reach out to me for some reason. Maybe they know I'm high maintenance in that regard, too. And Lawrence, he's got to have a really thankless job, because he approaches people with, you know, you can't have this, you do this, you're parked wrong, your sign's wrong. And he has really done an amazing job. I think he's only part-time. And he has basically, because I've been working on a couple, there's one citizen who is upset about a couple things. He's gotten compliance with mostly everybody except five people in the city. And these are just really over the top, like maybe have to get an attorney involved eventually or the courts or something. But for this whole city to look as good as it does with a part-time employee, and he's gotten voluntary compliance with everybody mostly. I mean, he's like an unsung hero to me, because our city looks different than other cities. And I think one of the reasons is because of his hard work. So I just really think that's important. And I think he needs to be thanked next time you see him. That's it.
Anyone else with council communications?
I have a couple. I just send people your email when they send it to me.
Thank you. Okay, I'll take good. That. It's good.
Yeah. Coming up on the March 7th is a taste of Camp Arroyo Grande. So if you haven't had a chance to go out to Camp Arroyo Grande, they're having a day event from, where's the time here? From 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And it's free for kids, and there's a suggested donation of $5 for adults. And it's join us for a day of games, line dancing, swimming, music, and fun. So that's a great opportunity.
Wait, what day is that?
That's going to be March 7th. So great opportunity to go up and see the camp. It's really looking great. On Wednesday, tomorrow, there's the AG track dedication. If you haven't had a chance to see the AG track, it looks incredible. That happens at 3:30. Grocery Outlet is having a grand opening on February 27th at 8:45 a.m. in the morning. With the grand opening, they're giving out some gifts and stuff. And I'll be attending an Eagle Scout ceremony on Saturday for Justin Stinson. So that's all I have.
I'm still back on putting that into my thing there. Thank you. Okay, well, that takes us then to item 14. This is closed session. We do have a closed session tonight. Mr. Carmel, do you want to read that? We haven't heard from you all night. I gave you something to do.
I mumbled something in the very beginning about the last closed session. it's actually item 15. That's a conference with real property negotiator. That's Mr. Bergman regarding 250 Wesley Street.
Item 15?
I guess I didn't get the revised agenda. Sorry, it is online. Is it item 14? Okay, it's item 14. Believe it or not, the Brown Act makes you specify what the closed session item number is.
Okay. Then would we have anyone who would like to speak on our closed session item? All right, seeing no one, will close public comment, and we will adjourn to closed session. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you in a couple weeks.